Today we are getting a briefing for our energy regulator, NERSA, on its both its strategic plan and annual performance plan. I've just been told that the CEO, Mr. Ndile Simande, is on her way. She had problems with her bus speech. Apologies, Mr. Simande. I was reading your apology and you let me down. You just came in. In which case, then, I will allow our secretary to read us other apologies.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the following apologies. Honorable Swaller, who has constituency commitments, and then Honorable Moloto, who is attending another meeting, but he will be joining us later, Chair. Those are the apologies.
Okay. In which case, then I will hand over to the NERSA. Yes, sir.
So, is it not common knowledge that Honorable Kinto is overseas?
Oh, yes. No, but when did you get that? I know. Sorry, it's a slip of mine. She went to Algeria.
Yeah.
She was just uprooted on the last minute and was told to pack her bags in, within hours and go to Nigeria. I don't know for how long, but it might be for some time. Thanks for that, Honorable Slav. Mrs. Pinti, what are your hands?
Good morning to the committee members and everybody. Apologies for being late. I couldn't be here yesterday. Chairperson, I also tend to apologize for the chairperson of the energy regulator, Mrs. Cecilia Kizai. She wasn't able to join us today at this briefing of the committee. So we're going to present the strategic plan of NERSA. For the 2012-13 to 2016-17, as well as focus particularly on the annual performance plan for the 2013-14 to the 2015-16 financial years. There's the content of how we plan to organize the presentation. It will not be particularly different from what we did last year, except for some minor details, and that's the second page that deals with content. We'll cover the strat plan, the challenges that NERSA faces, but show how these challenges are linked to the programs that we have selected as appropriate responses to those challenges, the annual performance plan, the budget and funding, and then we'll tender some concluding thoughts. Just by way of introduction, Chairperson, National Energy Regulator is a Section 3A, Public Finance Management Act entity. That's also established in terms of the National Energy Regulator Act, an act of 2004 that was passed by this House, and was established to regulate the electricity industry as contemplated in the Electricity Regulation Act of 2006, the piped gas industry as contemplated in the Gas Act of 2001, as well as the petroleum pipeline industry as contemplated in the Petroleum Pipelines Act. If one moves to the planning framework, in 2010, National Treasury rationalized and aligned the planning framework, and it became applicable to all national, provincial, constitutional institutions, as well as public entities in the development of their strat plans. And it was made applicable to Schedule 3A entities from 2012-13, and as NERSA were able to comply right from the beginning. The requirements are that we produce and table a strategic plan for a five-year planning horizon, produce and table an annual performance plan, including forward projections for a further 2 years, with annual and performance targets where appropriate, identify a core set of indicators needed to monitor the institutional performance. And in line with this, we have published a strategic plan, which was approved by the Minister. Generally, National Treasury discourages entities and departments to change their strategic plan. However, you may change the plan if there were significant policy shifts or there were significant gaps in the approved plan. In our case, neither of the two grounds existed, so our plan was not amended in any material way from the original plan that was approved by the minister. That's a planning concept and just essentially showing the bottom up as well as the top down and how these plans are meant to meet and eventually link with individual performance management within organizations. Again, shall go through quickly through our vision and mission. This, I think these are well known to the committee by now, to be a world-class leader in energy regulation, as well as to regulate the energy industry in accordance with the government laws and policies, standards, as well as international best practices as our mission. Those are our values that the organization lives by, and the regulatory principles which we apply when we consider matters that appear before the national energy regulator, so transparency, neutrality, consistency and predictability, independence, accountability, integrity, as well as efficiency in processing the work that we have to deal with. Our mandate, we distinguish the acts that we deal with into three categories. So there are the primary acts, which I've referred to, the National Energy Regulator Act, plus the three industry acts. We also have three levels, acts through which we raise our funding. We are allowed to raise levies from the gas industry, the petroleum pipeline industry, as well as the electricity industry at a generation level. And then we have what we call facilitating acts, the PFMA 1999, the Promotion of Access to Information Act 2000, as well as the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act of 2000. Just in terms of achievements at a high level, and I'll not go into too much detail, Chair, we are quite excited that we're able to finalize the MYPD3 application of ESCOM, and we approved an average annual increase of 8%. Out of 186, we received 183 municipal and private distributor tariff applications for the 2012-13 financial year and approved all of those for implementation. We also approved 47 renewable energy generation licenses within 90 days instead of the 120 days that is what is legislated. So that's us trying to be efficient in the way we are doing our thing. We also approved 7 licenses under the short-term power purchase program as part of the short-term mitigation program during the maintenance of the ESCOM fleet. We issued 9 distribution licenses. These ones we emphasize because they are the connection facility between ESCOM and the delivery point for the IPP generation facility. In terms of other significant, we believe, is that we concurred with 3 determinations that were made by the Minister of Energy in terms of Section 34 of the Electricity Regulation Act, which chairperson entailed shifting around some of the timelines of the IRP 2010, and increasing some of the megawatts in terms of certain technologies. So we concurred with 3 of those. That's the requirement of Section 34 of the Electricity Regulation Act. In terms of the piped gas industry, we approved the maximum prices of piped gas for SASO in terms of Section 21(1)(k) of the Gas Act. Chairperson, this becomes significant because up until now there's been a special dispensation that has been applicable to SASO in terms of the pipeline that they built to transport gas from Mozambique to South Africa. And in terms of this dispensation, SASO could charge prices. It was called market value pricing. Essentially, it was allowed to discriminate on any grounds that it felt it was necessary for their business. So in terms of that agreement, this period ends on the 26th of March 2014. And perchance the regulator on the 26th of March 2013 approved the maximum prices. And we did this 1 year ahead of the dispensation period expiring because we wanted to give SASO enough time to go and negotiate discounts with its customers and that those can then be submitted to the regulator in time and to enable that those come into effect on the 26th of March 2014 or the 27th of March 2014. We also approved the transmission tariffs, which we have been approving in any event. for the period 26 March 2014 to June 2015. We also approved a preliminary tariff for the Transnet pipeline. We call it the Lily pipeline. Transnet has got a pipeline they utilize to evacuate gas from Secunda to KZN. We have approved those tariffs. We will be finalizing it in the month of April. In terms of licensing, we have granted a number of licenses, construction of gas distribution facilities and trading facilities, as well as a one for operating a gas facility. Petroleum pipeline, we also dealt with the Transnet application here. This was almost the last application with the huge capital project that they've been busy with for the multi-product line and MTP. They had applied for 22%, and the regulator approved 8.53%, and we have made decisions on 60 storage and loading facilities. In terms of licensing, we've approved 8 construction and 3 operation licenses, amended 7 construction and storage licenses, and then revoked 13 storage licenses. Where we're amending, particularly the construction licenses, we're finding that we're giving applicants a particular period within which to complete their construction, and because of certain delays attributable to themselves at points, but mostly to other authorities in the country, they are then unable to finish those licenses, construction in the period stipulated in the license, and they therefore have to amend, apply for an amendment of the license for the period. We've taken a decision there to sort of give entities a longer lead time for them to finalize their construction. We have also investigated 67 suspected unlicensed activities, and of these, we discovered that 4 did not require licenses. All others then promptly applied for their licensing. This is an area which I think I find very interesting, where operators contest the authority of the regulator, and we have been working systematically with them to ensure that all of them come within the ambit of the new laws that require them to be licensed. So that was at a high level, just the achievements of NERSA in the previous financial year. In terms of the stretch plan, Chairperson, we did identify as an organization our strategic outcome-orientated goals, which is in terms of the requirement of national treasury. And these goals are, there are 5. The first one is to facilitate security of supply in order to support sustainable socio-economic development in South Africa. Second one, to facilitate investment in infrastructure in the energy industry to support sustainable socio-economic development in the country. Thirdly, to promote competitive and efficient functioning of the energy industry, again, towards sustaining socio-economic development in the country, to facilitate affordability and accessibility to the energy industry, to balance the economic interests of all stakeholders, and in support of socio-economic development of South Africa and a better life for all, and lastly, to position and establish NERSA as a credible and reliable regulator in order to play our part in creating regulatory certainty for people to come and invest in energy in the country. Now, our goals link to some of the 12 national outcomes that we all have to work towards. And these are the outcomes as well that have been identified by the Department of Energy. The even numbered one, so it's outcome 2, that talks to a long and healthy life for all South Africans. Outcome 4, decent employment through inclusive economic growth. 6, an efficient, competitive, and responsive economic infrastructure network. 8, sustainable human settlements. 10, environmental assets and natural resources that are well protected and continually enhanced. And lastly, an efficient and effective development of an effective, efficient, development-oriented public service, and an empowered and fair and inclusive citizenship. So how do we contribute to these? Without reading all of the points underneath each of the national outcomes, we have participated in the programs for cleaner fuels, and we have driven and contributed to the introduction of renewable energy programs and promoted their introduction into the energy mix. In determining the electricity pricing, NERSA has set aside 3.2 cents per kilowatt in the second year, in the second multi-year price determination, and we did that as well in the third one for electrification cross subsidy. We need to make sure that electrification continues in the country, and we have made an allowance for it. And we are taking affordability into account when we're setting and are approving tariffs. We have implemented inclining block tariffs to protect the low-income energy consumers, and we believe that we're regulating in a manner which facilitates security of supply. In terms of outcome four, decent employment, generally energy is the lifeblood of any economy. So in the way we license and we set and approve tariffs and prices, we ensure that we create the precondition towards the achievement of economic growth in the country, generally speaking. By approving the renewable energy licenses, we ensured that the socio-economic development commitments specified by the DOE in the bidding process are part of the license conditions and they can be monitored going forward. And we're also promoting transformation and those companies that are owned and controlled by historically disadvantaged individuals. Outcome six, an efficient and competitive and responsive economic infrastructure network. As highlighted, we're regulating in a manner that facilitates the security of supply through the rules, frameworks, and methodologies that we have set. We're making sure that there's regulatory certainty and encouraging third parties to invest in that sector. By setting cost-reflective tariffs, we are encouraging investment in the sense that investors would know that they would not only recoup their cost of investment, but they would also earn a reasonable return that's proportional to the risk they've taken by investing in the sector. We are also facilitating third-party access to facilities, particularly storage facilities, but also to the electricity network, as well as the piped gas network. And then through monitoring and ensuring compliance and undertaking technical audits, we establishing regulatory efficiency, but also ensuring that the objectives of regulation and those of government in general are met. Sustainable and human settlements and improved quality of life. Essentially here it's access to electricity and energy services in general and then facilitating reliability of supply. We have participated in some interesting community dispute resolutions there, but we have a mandate to resolve disputes, including mediating, arbitrating, and addressing complaints that entities might have. Outcome 10, that relates to environmental assets that are protected. When we license, we always ensure that conditions that are required and set by the National Environmental Management Act are incorporated as license conditions for entities to operate. And we have, as indicated, participated and promoted the issue of renewable energy investment. We have made provision for energy efficiency and general conservation of energy and electricity in the MYPD 1 and 2. As well as 3, although there's a different institutional arrangement in 3. And of course, we are watching that transition to the low carbon economy, and we are making our voice heard in that space as well. Outcome 12, relating to an efficient and effective public service. We contribute through ensuring that NERSA processes are transparent and that they enable public participation. And Chairperson, perhaps at this point one can mention the fact that in fact through the MYPD3 process we discovered some gaps that we didn't contemplate in the way we consult, and now we have to revise our consultation procedures so that we are indeed inclusive of all South Africans of all means. You know, it might have come out sensationally in the newspapers that our hearing was disrupted in Port Elizabeth, but we believe that the points that were raised, they were valid. The location of public hearings, the language in which the documents are publicized, those types of issues are coming through. In fact, at some point people indicated you hold your hearings when we are at work. We can't take time out. So please hold your hearings in the evening so that we can attend in our numbers. And there's validity to some of those issues. We thought we'd mastered the public consultation process, but we obviously have to go back to the drawing board
There was no need for 32. But there was a need to. It could have been done in a different way.
It could. The point could have been communicated in a different way, Chairperson. But
just on that point, if we could divert a little bit. But what about the quality of the inputs themselves? Diverse as they were. I mean, I was in Potchefstroom, Tokwe, and I was here in Cape Town just for once, and I could pick up a very interesting diverse, and you obviously were there in all of them. If you just share with the members, you know, what impact did it have compared to your previous determination processes?
Chairperson, just in terms of comparison from MYPD2 to MYPD3, what was the big difference was the numbers of inputs that came through and people who presented. However, we've always said with this diversity of submissions, where other people will just walk in and say, we just can't afford it. In Durban, they were saying, in Notabene, they were saying, we can't access electricity at current prices, so please just don't even contemplate increasing it. We're unemployed. In some instances, people threatened crime, which we then had to deal with. And then, of course, there were the sophisticated comments that went into the detail of the application. There was a community that complained that they were not able to interact with the detail of the application because it was in high-flown technical language. And they sort of were suggesting that ESCOM should find a simplified version and publish a simplified version of what the application is about so that they're able to interact with it as well as other people would. So we are looking at it, Chairperson. One of the things we're thinking about is that perhaps the format of people coming in making presentations with PowerPoints and written documents might not necessarily cover all communities. So we are looking at holding things what that we would call town hall meetings, where you just allow communities to come in and in their language express how they feel about the application, because at points it's people feeling heard as opposed to, you know, what eventually happens in these procedures. In Tlokwe particularly, we had about 5 presenters withdraw because they felt that they had come to the hearing, they had given us their documents, they acknowledged their documents, and they then said, no, we won't make verbal presentations. We've given you our written ones, and this particular person represented our views. So there's an interesting thing we are learning as well out of this particular process. We are continuing with making sure that we invite the public to comment and participate on all decisions that we take as an organization, so whether it's through our public hearings or written comments on our documents, and as indicated, we'll improve that particular area. Our customer education, we are doing outreach programs. However, there's room for improvement there. And we are continuing with training and development of staff as well as stakeholders to ensure that the regulatory process is efficient. We do have our corporate social investment activity, which we do through sponsoring an orphanage in Social Mbuza called Luvuyo. The TechnoGirl is not so much CSI as it is our contribution as an organization to the development of the pipeline of learners who pick up science and math so that they are eventually able to come and work in this particular industry. So what we do through the TechnoGirl program is that we host it's female learners from disadvantaged communities. We have about 8 of them. They come through during their holidays, and they spend a week, 2 weeks in December within NERSA, and they're exposed to various entities that we deal with and to NERSA processes. And in the end, and we take them from grade 9 until they get to grade 12. So we hope that, for one, we can keep them in the schooling system, we can get them to get interested in science and math. And the first group of techno girls that they started with 12 years ago passed last year, and all of the techno girls got matriculation exemption, and they came from Limpopo. So the process has now been spread across the country, and the energy sector, we're all participating in it as energy entities. And as I indicated, this is the first group of learners that we have taken. This is the second year. They're in grade 10 this year, and we hope to see them through to grade 12. Compliance with other government strategies. Chair, we got a note to indicate quite late yesterday how we fit in with the National Development Plan, the Industrial Policy Action Plan, the Strategic Infrastructure Program. All of those taken together, Chair, by the time they were finalized, we had gone through with our process. So when we review, when we do a strategic review this year, we will then take them into account, and when we present next year, we will indicate some of the gaps that were in our programs because we haven't referenced those particular government programs very specifically, Chair. So this year we can't show the alignment as directly as we would. However, Chair, we did take the DOE program and placed it alongside the national program to ensure that we at least align to the DOE program. Our strategic objectives as an organization, they are, Chair, so essentially to create a regulatory environment that facilitates investments in energy and in energy infrastructure, ensuring that energy supply is certain and secure for current and future user needs, ensure that fair competition exists within this industry, ensuring that regulatory certainty exists so that people can invest, ensuring that energy is accessible and affordable to all citizens, and lastly, to ensure that NERSA is established and positioned as a credible and a reliable regulator. We have 6 programs to achieve our goals, and these programs cut across the industries that we regulate. So for all 3 sectors, we have a program on setting and or approving tariffs and prices, licensing and registration, compliance monitoring and enforcement, dispute resolution, setting of rules, codes, and frameworks, and then lastly, organizational effectiveness. Chair, those are the objectives of each of these programs. We do them in this particular slide, and we don't repeat it by industry. I don't know, Chair, I think with your permission, I can skip going into the details. I can see you're reading quite closely, so maybe let me just go through it quickly. In terms of setting and approving tariffs and prices, the strategic objective is to set and approve tariffs and prices that facilitate affordability and accessibility while balancing the economic interests of all stakeholders. So whilst tariffs must be affordable and ensure accessibility, operators must be able to earn a reasonable return so that they continue to provide those services. In terms of licensing and registration, it's really to ensure that there's orderly entry and orderly development in the energy industry. People don't just come in and do just what they want and how they want it. Compliance monitoring. So once we have set the conditions in the license, we monitor to enforce compliance and to ensure that operators out there comply with their conditions. And Chairperson, it is surprising how much non-compliance we discover out there. So it's an area that we need to strengthen. Dispute resolution, this is normally something that regulators do, and when we do it, we do it to ensure that we create a fair balance between the needs of all stakeholders. Often consumers feel outsized by the operator. And again, this is an area where we also refine our work as an organization. We have set rules, and the reason we set rules is just to ensure that in terms of consistency, uniformity, and standard practice, entities know beforehand what they have to comply with, how they must comply with the rules, and they can then apply and get their applications approved with efficiency. And the last one, the objective of establishing NERSA as an efficient and effective regulator, is that given the landscape we have in the country, if you don't have an effective and an efficient regulator, you could hamper the development of the energy industry overall. So, Chair, the next section will deal with the challenges that the organization faces, and we'll take them by industry. And this time we'll summarize them and round them up. So there are challenges in relation to the demand and supply situation in the country. Demand is outstripping supply. How do we respond to it as NERSA? We have streamlined the introduction of IPP and the licensing process thereof. we are participating in the energy efficiency and demand side management, as well as the energy conservation scheme for emergency conditions by setting the rules, guidelines, as well as codes, and then creating, assisting Eskom to create space for maintenance of the generation fleet in the manner that we license and register entities. Transportation and reliability of electricity. We do assess and evaluate Eskom projects, particularly for the transmission development plan, as Eskom has approved it. And in terms of the rules and the grid code, we ensure that they then implement accordingly. In distribution and reticulation, there's also a number of challenges there, including the state of the infrastructure. We have issued a compliance framework, as well as we implement and monitor. We have upped our compliance monitoring and enforcement there. We did a set of about 27 municipalities. And Chairperson, that report read like the report we had done for EDI Holdings, just in terms of the state of the infrastructure there. Cost of supply studies, we have requested all distributors to do cost of supply studies so that we start relating the tariffs that they charge as distributors to what it costs them. And we're able to better check what they spend their money on and what they charge customers around. In terms of access, affordability, and promotion of investments, for access and affordability, we have we started out with inclining block tariffs, and we discovered that in the manner that they were initially approved, they couldn't be implemented, and therefore we allowed them to be customized by the different municipalities, because IBTs depend quite a lot on the profile of the customers that a municipality has. So we allowed customization, and we found that a lot more municipalities were able to introduce IBTs. And a preliminary study that we've done on IBTs indicated that indeed they did result in the lower income users benefiting, although there's still room for improvement in other areas. We'll monitor the implementation of MYPD3. We are currently starting with the report for the MYPD2, and at some point perhaps we could come and present that to Parliament.
I was just about to say that, Honourable Member. So at this level, even at constituency level, you do pick up from time to time people complaining about the IBTs. But they do it in a very interesting way, because they just say that, look, we are told that we've got free basic electricity and all of that, but all of a sudden, you know, if I go and buy electricity, payment for the month, you know, or my usual take ends on the third week, if I then go and buy electricity for another 100 rand, I found that this other 100 rand, you know, is less now. Now, the first time I heard that, I said, but what does this mean? I was still naive about IPT, and checked with someone and said, no, it's because of the IPT mechanism. So I'm glad that NASA is picking that up. I hope the secretary and the advisor is noting it. Other than you presenting, it would be helpful also to get other players coming in, Eskom, municipalities, Trusalga and stuff, you know. At some stage, we really need to take up the IPT issue, you know, head on. Thanks.
And so when you invite municipalities, we can give you a sense of the differences, so that you invite municipalities with experiences across the board. You've got Egruleni, that's got the most ideal profile of customers, Johannesburg and others in the middle, and the balance of municipalities on the other extreme, where their customer mix is largely all domestic, and it's a different ballgame altogether in that context compared to the other guy, and compared to Eskom for that matter. So it would be better if you did a cross-section so that you're able to see the differences and see why we needed to customize it instead of insisting on it being applied in a similar way across. But we'll assist in giving that profile. One of the responsibilities we have as NERSA is to ensure that particularly distributors establish consumer forums to make sure that they interact with their customers. However, there have been delays in this particular area because the Electricity Act requires regulations to be issued by the minister. Those regulations haven't been issued, and you can see operators are kicking the issue to touch. Until those regulations are issued, they are taking their own time to establish forums. It's one or two entities that have established these forums voluntarily. Others are waiting for the law, and we are working though quite closely with the department to finalize that set of law, that set of regulations. And then in the pipe gas industry, the lack of a credible gas anchor, lack of credible gas anchor customers. So there is gas that's available from Mozambique and in some parts of the country. However, when we consulted with investors and stakeholders in general to find out why is the gas market not growing in the country, we discovered that from a business case point of view, gas operators felt that they could not invest unless there was a credible anchor customer, and that anchor customer is essentially an electricity power station. And to add to the woes, the quantum of gas in the IRP was very limited. So one of the determinations that the minister made was to increase the amount of gas or megawatts generated from gas so that it would assist people to get to a business case level. And once people are able to invest for a power station, they could then invest in reticulation and provide other, supply other customers. So there was that particular issue. But fortunately, it was an issue that was quick to deal with. When we shared this with the department had also gotten the information. And the amount of megawatts for natural gas have since been increased in the IRP and fast forwarded. And a big part of that was lobbying really and establishing ourselves as an effective regulator. Second one, ensuring that prices are equitable and competitive for all categories and classes of customers. The piped gas industry is an interesting one for us as a regulator because on the one hand, we have to promote the development of the industry, and you can promote it only if you have prices that attract people to come and invest. However, on the other hand, you need to ensure that you price such that it's affordable for those people who are using gas and they continue to use gas. To deal with that, as NERSA, we've endeavored to send correct pricing signals by implementing the maximum pricing methodology. We have investigated the current pricing methodology of Sasol, which is called the market value pricing, where they are allowed to discriminate for whatever reason. And we have also enforced the pricing provisions of the agreement itself. And this we did in the first instance by setting and approving the methodology and the prices. Secondly, though, through compliance monitoring and as well as investigation. Entry two and competition within the gas market in the manner that we have been licensing and looking at the compliance framework and dealing with third-party access issues. We believe that in time we will see the industry taking off. Loss of credibility and regulatory reputation can deter the development of the gas market. So as a regulator, it is critical that we create regulatory certainty, and this we do under the program of ensuring that we establish NERSA as an efficient as well as an effective regulator. Petroleum pipeline industry regulation. I did allude to this particular challenge earlier on when I was speaking. Construction delays have resulted in increased capital costs, which have attracted higher tariffs. What we have done as an organization is to make a determination of prudently incurred costs in the increased capital costs due to infrastructure construction delays, and we have allowed some and some we haven't allowed. However, we are now doing a full-on study on the, particularly the Transnet. We have just appointed service providers who are going to do a full-on study on that particular project, and we will then make other decisions appropriately once we've got that report. The shareholder, interesting enough, also did a similar investigation as to why the project overran so much. Tariff increases may incentivize other modes of transport. when the pipeline needs higher volumes. So this is a very interesting one where, in general, there's a preference that transportation of petroleum products be through the pipeline. However, in the manner that we regulate between ourselves and the department, there is a contestation that's created between rail and pipeline transportation as well as road and rail. And we are involved in a situation now with Transnet where we have observed that the volumes in the pipeline are reducing, and both sides are now conducting an investigation because Transnet was not able to provide a quick response to the questions we're asking in that space, so they've commissioned a whole study into why the volumes are reducing. We are also doing that as a regulator because we have our own sense that there's something that's happening in the way we're regulating that we're incentivizing one mode of transport as opposed to this pipeline for which so much money was spent. So this is another one, Chair, that could be flagged for us to come back to the committee around once we finalize that study. And then the other challenge that we face in the petroleum space is the security of supply of petroleum products into the inland. We continuously seeing bottlenecks at particular periods in the year. We have now established a monitoring team. It had always been there, but now it is working a little bit better and a little bit more actively and regularly, where industry players, the department, ourselves as a regulator sit, and we look at the numbers and the plans for maintenance and shutdowns by the different operators and trying to optimize how those are done so that if they are done, they do not result in shortages of petrol in parts of the country. So applicants, the other two challenges here, applicants for storage construction licenses need to find areas of low or no competition to remain competitive. And Chair, we're dealing with this through our licensing process, so we evaluate these and look at locations, and we try and identify appropriate action against unlicensed facilities, as I've referred to it. Promotion of third-party access. Common carriage and third-party access, we do monitoring and we're facilitating that, but Chairperson, the numbers are not great. We have always been referring to this. The departmental report or the review of the petroleum charter highlights this, but we're also seeing it from a regulatory point of view. And Chair, we suspect that at some point we might have to intensify and write a little bit more into the regulations of how common carriage should be opened up. In cross-cutting regulatory issues, information asymmetry, this is a perennial problem or challenge of all regulators in the world. As an organization, we've implemented the regulatory reporting manual for both financial and non-financial information, and in time we hope that we can reduce the extent of the asymmetry. It's one of those things that you never quite eliminate, but you can reduce it. We also continue to advise policymakers and advise them of policy gaps and policy things that we see from implementing our own responsibility and our own mandate. We coordinate our activities with other regulators, those with concurrent jurisdiction with NERSA, particularly the Competition Commission and the Consumer Commission and one or two others. Chairperson, in time, the Financial Services Board will also come in. And around consumer advocacy issues, one has highlighted that we are doing some consumer education. However, this is an area that we can improve quite a bit on as an organization, Chair. Processes and methodologies, being benchmarked against the best in the world and making sure that we stay right up there in terms of our vision. We continue to do regulatory impact assessments, and we are about to embark on a big exercise for the last 5 years to see what has been the impact.
Of our regulatory. Also going to Paris.
Yes, Chairperson, I am.
Benchmark.
It's a benchmarking, Chairperson. It's also collaborating with sister organizations. Yeah. We also do benchmark, Chair. We generally consider ourselves as a very young regulator, so when we're developing methodologies, we are keen to make sure that we don't pay the same school fees as other people have paid, and trying to get up from the learning culture. And the other big exercise we're doing within the organization is to harmonize regulatory processes. Now, the whole sector is energy sector. It so happens that at this point in the country we have three different laws that were written at different points, different thrusts, and different different focuses. So as best we can as an organization, we are beginning to harmonize the regulatory processes and methodologies, and we just hope it is a coincidence this time around that both Eskom and Transnet ended up at 8%. But we did relook the issue of the balance sheet issues in both instances, and having applied a similar methodology, we found that the decision hovered around the same number. So we want to see if it happens again, then it means the harmonization process is working. And those are essentially the challenges, but also a way of showing how we are responding to those challenges as an organization. At an organizational level, Chair, at the moment there's quite a bit of activity in the legislative area, in the legislation area, where three of the acts that we are dealing with are being amended, and the new act is being brought into being, and we will deal with those through the institutional and organizational review process that we're going to be inviting on soon, just so that we're able to also develop transition plans to react to the end state once the various laws have been passed. General challenge that the whole world experiences is attraction and retention of requisite skills, and we are also looking at doing a few things in that space other than just improving our procedures and processes, looking at the culture within the organization, and trying to ensure that our conditions of service keep us competitive, relatively speaking, because you can only deal with it on that basis. In terms of enabling technology, we are doing a business process analysis with a view to improving our processes, both from a business process point of view, including the automation thereof, and we are also focusing on knowledge management to ensure that we are able to manage all the information that we and the knowledge that we are developing as an organization. We're trying to build, challenged with a conducive working environment, as indicated. We're dealing with it through the org culture process. And, so we'll be refurbishing our building. We hope that would excite people somewhat. And in terms of the image of NERSA, we are going to be doing a stakeholder perception survey and respond accordingly to the issues that come out of that survey. And it's something that we will just keep as an organization as a tool to keep ourselves in check into the future. That was the challenges section, Chair. I'll now move to the annual performance plan for 2013-14 to 2015-16. These are detailed in the presentations that are in front of you. I'm going to skip the pie chart and just say that in program one, for electricity, which is the setting and or approval of tariffs and prices, we will be looking at approving municipal tariffs, implementing looking at the implementation of inclining block tariffs through basic electricity as well, monitoring of the implementation of MYPD3 by ESCOM, and the structural adjustment approval as a component of the plan. And Chair, that's the underlying detail in terms of KPIs and how we report. And so, Chairperson, I don't know if you want me to go into the detail of the specific KPI under each of the programs.
Members, maybe if we just run through them a bit first.
Run through them.
But slow down on three basic electricity. we okay. IBT, three FDE, slow down a little bit.
Okay, Chairperson. Thank you for that guidance. So the program KPI, we measure the extent of the distributors that are licensed. Our target is 100%. As you would have seen in the previous year, it was 98, which was the highest it got the few years before that, it hovered around the 80% type percentage. So we are getting a whole lot more of the licenses to apply, get approved tariffs, and apply approved tariffs. We do the annually published guidelines for.
Wait a minute. What's the impact on licenses that have not been approved or lapsed or something like that?
The applications are done annually, and so the license exists, and a big part of the license relates to tariffs. What we found was that particularly municipalities, they wouldn't apply for approval of their tariffs, and they would charge tariffs from the previous year or tariffs that they've just decided as a municipality. For various reasons, there's a reason that relates to a legal question of whether or not the regulator can approve those tariffs. So there were those municipalities that were contesting the authority of NERSA in that space. But others, it's just a question of capacity checks. So what we've done is we've improved and increased our monitoring, and municipalities are realizing that they're being caught out. Ordinarily, we should have been able to do much more than just compliance monitoring. We should have been able to take them through a procedure and impose a penalty on them. However, Chair, there were legal challenges around our ability to do that. And a big part of the National Energy Regulator Amendment Act addresses that. The challenge was this. The Electricity Regulation Act said that the regulator could sit as a tribunal and impose a tariff. I can impose a penalty where there's non-compliance with the license conditions. And it violated a very fundamental principle of the law that you can't be a judge in your own court. So you sit as a regulator, you issue a license, you set conditions, you check for compliance, you find non-compliance, and you sit as a judge. It just couldn't quite be brought into effect, that part of the Electricity Regulation Act, and Chair, is what is being amended with the National Energy Regulator that creates a separate tribunal where then the regulator would be able to file a case against those entities that are not complying with license conditions and be able to find them.
Yeah. Am I correct if I say, in a sense, partially or by and large or whatever, you can comment, that also had an effect on the efficiency in the sector?
Definitely it did have, because what it meant is that you had quite effective regulation from generation to transmission, and you lost the benefits thereof, particularly when it came to the distribution end of the sector. It's quite true.
There you are.
So we annually publish the guidelines, and we're doing it by guidelines just given the number of operators. But when we approve individually. We are also rolling out the regulatory reporting manuals to municipalities. However, given the limitations of capacity in that particular sector, we've decided to start with the metros, and even with the metros, not all 8 of them at the moment. So we're trying to do, we're targeting to do 6. For the year 2012-13, and the experience has been very interesting. But we have found cooperation with all the big metros, and once we have fixed that, we'll then take the next layer, which would put us at about 75% of the distribution industry in the country, and then we will work with the rest of the municipalities to move them across. However, we do realize that the further down we go, the more difficult it is, because the skills and systems problems at that level are very big. But the big 6 metros have come through, and the other 2 metros will come in with the next round. Implementation of inclining block tariffs, we're targeting to ensure that 80% of distributors apply the inclining block tariffs. When we started with it, Chairperson, the first year, almost all municipalities came back and threw their hands up in the air and said they can't implement it, and we started working one by one with them. And once we had done that, and we had also reviewed the position and allowed for customization, we found that there was a bigger uptake. At the moment, we're targeting 80%, but in the next year, we'll target 100% of distributors to apply the IBT. And we approve annually the free basic electricity rate for ESCOM. And we do it on time and communicate it to all the players. Annually approved report on ESCOM's actual revenue recovery. So every year, Chairperson, we do get a report from ESCOM and we monitor that. We do get a report about what amount actually they have recovered. And we utilize the regulatory clearing account to balance the swings and roundabouts. We approve the ESCOM regulatory financial reports, and Chairperson, they have been cooperating very well, and those reports are beginning to yield results. There's some efficiency in the way that we are dealing with ESCOM because the regulatory financial reports are beginning to show their effect. And we always as well approve the electricity retail tariff, ERSA. ESCOM retail tariff. Chairperson, is the retail tariff, is the part where they sell to.
Why do you give me such a fancy name? We just want to confuse us.
Fancy term, I think it's awful. It's essentially the retail tariff, Chair. So, you know, the MIPD is a generation point. This is a retail point. The point at which it reaches the customer.
Okay.
So we do this one annually, Chair, and it's just one of those things that we have to do. And as I had indicated at another session, our work does tend to be repetitive, but it's important that we do it and do it in time for the financial years of the operators, Chair. Licensing and registration, this stuff relates to processing of licenses, and very simple KPI, percentage of licenses, license applications processed within the statutory time frame. This is an evolving KPI, Chair. At the moment, we're saying we would like to see 80% of license applications being approved within 120 days. However, we are beginning to talk about shifting both ends. So 100% of applications being processed within statutory deadline. However, we're wanting to see efficiencies as well because we have seen that the organization can process in lesser than the statutory timeline. So as the KPI improves, it will eventually be 100% in a lesser period than the statutory deadline. But at the moment, this is what we are doing.
You say lesser period. It do not be exact.
No, it's 100% today, it's 4 months. The law says we must process applications within 4 months.
Yes, yes, I commend that. Yes. It's just the lesser period I like. You're not exact. Not for now.
Not for
maybe
now.
Later.
No. We are experimenting with people's scorecards. So in the executive scorecards, we've cut the time down to 90 days. And we've increased that percentage. So we want to see if that works. We can then elevate it to an organizational KPI. Yeah. Compliance monitoring and enforcement, Chair. Compliance audits, monitoring and implementation of action plans arising from those compliance audits. The numbers look small, Chair. However, they relate to our own levels of resourcing. I would also like to see us doing a little bit more and turning it around a little bit faster. In fact, when this unit presented its action plan, their turnaround cycle is 3 years. So in 3 years, they'll finish the 187 distributors and then start again in another 3 year round. So clearly there's something that we need to do as an organization to make sure that we cover more in a lesser period and make sure that there's compliance. But for the moment, we are happy as an organization that we've gotten to a point where we have an action plan, it's got timelines, and we're able to see how many of the municipalities are being the distributors are being audited, and then ensuring compliance with those action plans that they undertake. And again, Chair, this is one of those that can only end up in action plans until we're able to take further steps with the amendment of the law. one of the things that we're looking to do is to release an annual report on the state of compliance, particularly on the electricity industry. It's something that I think the regulator used to do at some point. We dropped it. We want to bring it back. But it should have sufficient information behind it. So we will do that when we are at that point.
Oh. Is there any relation between this and infrastructure maintenance?
Very direct relationship, Chairperson.
Okay. Note it down when because I don't want to break the trend. That one is very fundamental, honourable members, because I'm sure once I say infrastructure rehabilitation, everybody's eyes will widen and ears will cock up. So please take some time to articulate those relations. Not now. When down during questions and answer time.
Program four shall relate to this dispute resolution, mediation and arbitration. Again, the targets there are work in progress. So percentage of complaints processed within statutory timelines, at the moment the target is 75%. Within 120 days, we'll, as we move along, we'll increase the percentage of complaints processed, and then at some point we'll then cut the time period as well. And we're looking at doing an annual report on those trends. And this is an interesting area, Chair, where in one of the court cases, the methodology that the regulator utilized to resolve the dispute is in question. So as an entity, we are also looking to refine those issues, where we have different ways of dealing with different complaints, and we're trying to then standardize and align and make sure that it's clear. People know that this is the first step, this is the first thing that will happen to a complaint, and this is the next, and ultimately that's the thing that will happen. But they will also use the court case to learn our lessons and refine our processes there. Program 5, setting of rules, guidelines, and codes for the regulation, particularly of the electricity industry. There's a grid code administration there, audits of transmission, development plans, audit of energy efficiency, and demand-side management, and then reports on the performance and progress of renewable energy installations. So we have approved a framework in that particular space. In terms of the KPI, again, Chair, it's percentage of applications from the industry relating to the fair and equitable access to electricity infrastructure requiring exemption to the distribution and transmission grid, considered in line with legal requirements. So the target is that 80% of these applications must be approved. And on the other side as well, the next one is 80% amendments now. So the other one is exemptions, and the other one is amendment of the grid code. The grid code needs to be amended annually, and we need to then ensure that we publish those amendments. So in the previous financial year, one of the key amendments that we introduced into the grid code was to deal with the wind generators. So we've now included a wind generated facility framework within our grid code, and we'll do that as we move along, as the different types of energy sources are introduced into our grid. Number of approved audit reports that detail the assessment and evaluation of projects on ESCOM's approved transmission development plan. There's only one transmission development plan, is the extent to which they sort out their execute on their projects. I'm sure we can improve that KPI. Number of approved audit reports for the EEDSM, Energy Efficiency and Demand Side Management. In compliance with that's it's only one annual, it's only one report that we do, and every year we do have an audit of energy efficiency and the demand side management. Number of action plans for the annual EEDFM, so arising out of the audit, there would be things that need to be improved, in that would be contained in an action plan, and it often would be the one action plan, but I think So when we look at the internal staff, what we do is we do set a percentage of how much of that action plan they should make sure is implemented. And then the number of reports on the performance and progress of renewable energy, we're looking at doing it quarterly. And, so there'll be four reports per year on that particular area. Establishing NERSA as an efficient and effective regulator in terms of electricity, it's the issue of establishment of end-user forums. And the target for this year is 2013-2014 is to persuade 5 operators to set up end-user forums. And remember, electricity we cut up by size relative to the full industry. So even though there are 187 operators, the top 12 of those constitute 75% of the industry. So the numbers sometimes look like they're small, but they are significant. So we're looking at as indicated, Chair, remember the law hasn't been passed. So at the moment we're just working on the power of station to get operators to set up the end user forum. So the target is 5. Initially the team was saying we can't set it up until the law has been passed, but there's been such a stretch target there to get a few operators to set it up and see how it works. In terms of the past gas industry, Program 1, again, back to recall our programs, setting an approval of tariffs and our prices. So it's approval of maximum prices, approval of transmission and storage tariffs, the report on Sasol gas compliance with all pricing provisions of the Schedule 1 to the agreement, and then the calculation of aggregate prices. KPI is the number of applications finalized and approved within 120 days from the date of publishing the application. And Jefferson here, the idea is that everything must be approved. So that's how we count that one. Finalized number of transmission and storage charges within the 120-day period. Decision on Transnet, and as well as the draft and or consultation paper on Gauteng, as well as the transmission pipeline tariffs for Sasol gas. Internally though, Chairperson, what we've done is to challenge this 120 days, and we have seen that staff is actually able to do the work in less than 120 days, but you know, we will align what we put on the organizational scorecard with what is happening internally, if it proves to be sustainable. And then the third KPI relates to the number of days for providing a report on Sasol gas compliance. So this is a single report we do once a year where we check whether or not Sasol has complied with key aspects or critical aspects of the Schedule 1. Schedule 1 essentially relates to pricing provisions. And this is one area, Chair, where we've been kept very busy because without faith we find that one or other thing is not done correctly by Sasol gas. And the number of cases has been increasing, I suppose, with the customers of Sasol seeing that the regulator is doing something. They've been coming forward much more. And inevitably, in almost all the cases that we've dealt with, 80-90% of the cases, we found that Sasol was not charging the correct price. And then, Chair, we calculate aggregate prices and publish them. This is just a tool for the regulator to get the industry to know what the price ranges are. But again, it's not the LPG, it's the people who are using piped gas for their production processes in the main. So we do them by province so that people can know that if I'm in the Gauteng province, this is where I should be paying. If my price is above this, then I must approach the regulator and they must sort it out. In a few instances, we've ordered Sasol to refund their customers where they had overcharged them. So it might look as a timid KPI, aggregate prices, but it's a very powerful information tool and empowerment tool for customers. Program 2, licensing and registration, processing of license and registration applications and the implementation of decisions, investigation of industry-related issues, fund registered import and export, and then reporting on the implementation of the gas-to-power component of the IRP. The KPI, percentage of all license applications finalized according to licensing procedures. The target is 50%, an evolving one. Chair, the next year we'll move it up quite substantially. We'll definitely try and incentivize the team here. Number of days taken to finalize registration applications. The target is that 100% of registration applications are processed within 60 days and approved within 90 days. The registration chair is a slightly lighter and easier process where you just register the existence of a project or an operation. It's not like an approval of a facility. So there the no negotiations, all registrations must just be sorted out and be done within those periods. And then the annual report on the implementation of gas to power and the IRP. So, you know, every year we will look at how close are we getting to the implementation of the gas to power component of the integrated resource plan, and we'll issue an annual report around that particular issue. Program 3, compliance monitoring and enforcement, assessment of volume balance reports, conducting audits on the ROMCO pipeline, conducting investigations and or inspections, and then reporting on uncommitted capacity. Number of monthly volume balance reports assessed for discrepancies. In terms of the agreement, chairperson, between the parties on the SAFO pipeline from Mozambique, there was a critical number that was targeted, and that was 120 million gigajoules. SASOL needed to make sure that 120 million gigajoules are availed on the South African side at a particular time. So it was an important number to check and keep track of. So monthly we get reports on where that volume is at a particular meter between the border of Mozambique and Swaziland and South Africa. And generally the number is, yes, becoming academic because SASOL has exceeded it by quite a bit. SASOL is now sitting at about 140 million gigajoules that they're moving into the country. But the 120 million was an important number in terms of the agreement, and we monitor it until the agreement lapses.
Gigajoules per month, per week, per day?
No, 120 million per annum. But we monitor it monthly, Chair, because then you can see the build-up. In 1 year where SACOL did not keep to a certain number in a month, when we got to the end of the financial year, we then found that they were less than 120, so it's useful to monitor it monthly, but the commitment is 120 per annum. Number of audits on the ROMCO pipeline, I think in terms of the agreement here, we have to do two, and those are the two that we will do. And this is inspections, technical inspections, integrity, whether or not there are practices in terms of maintaining the pipe and operating it. So we do that. Number of investigations and inspections. So over and above complaints and resolving complaints, the Gas Act allows the regulator, enables the regulator to conduct investigations. So if we saw a pattern, for instance, of non-compliance by SAFO in a particular area, we could then do a market investigation, almost like the Competition Commission does. And what we're saying here is that we want the team to look at about four of those, so once a quarter. But going forward, Chair, we might want to increase that particular target. But investigations are big. They tend to be very big. And you don't want to set an impossible target. But we feel at the moment we're comfortable with the four. And then, of course, we do quarterly monitoring on the regulatory reporting manual compliance. And the target within the gas industry was to get the full year financial reports from 50% of the licenses. And we'll increase the numbers as we go. Gas is also another one. If electricity is bad in terms of numbers, in this industry, three players are 90%. Some such number, so 50% might look small, but also again significant in terms of the number of players or the size of players there. Evaluation report in terms of uncommitted capacity on the transmission pipeline. So we're saying, Chair, we're looking at doing ROMCO plus one entity. Uncommitted capacity assists us to ensure third-party access. So the operator must tell us that this is our pipeline, and this is the amount of product we'll be able to move. That open space you then utilize for third party actors. This is generally done around the world to encourage competition, but in our country we want to do both competition and transformation. So we insisting that the entities operators are obliged to report their uncommitted capacity in the transmission pipeline to the regulator, so that the regulator knows at any point. From time to time, okay, we also go in and do our own audit to see whether what they're reporting is what's on the ground. Program 4 relates to dispute resolution, mediation and arbitration. Here we're looking at resolution of complaints received and finalization of investigation. And the targets and the KPIs are set out there, percentage of complaint investigations completed within 9 months and non-compliance notices issued where applicable, so 50% of applications or of complaints received. And then 50% of own initiated investigations. So again, you know, work in progress. Chairperson, we possibly will improve that KPI, but it's a relatively new area that we're going into, particularly those investigations. Program 5, setting of rules, guidelines and codes. Chair, here we just thought that we should use the methodology that's used by government, develop a historically disadvantaged individual scorecard, and require the operator to report against the key components of that. The first time we're looking at it, so the team here was being incentivized to develop the scorecard, and then going forward it would be compliant with that scorecard. Program 6, in terms of death, and their contribution to establishing NEFSA as an efficient and effective regulator. It's engagement with proposed legislation. There's proposed amendment to the GAS Act, and we intend to participate quite actively in that particular space, but also engagement with stakeholders for the GAS industry. It turned out to be something quite big, and just the experience of what we've done has yielded quite a lot of goodwill from the industry players. So the KPIs there are ongoing engagement with the policymakers. It's generally a very difficult area to measure, but at the very least, we do want to make sure that the organization is able to comment on those processes by the policymakers. And then the number of stakeholder workshops and media engagements, we are targeting 4 for this year, but possibly it will improve as we move along. Now, the stakeholder workshops are very different from public hearings and those types of things. It's where we just met with industry players and we have open-ended discussions about particular topics. So the first area that we addressed was the promotion of investment in gas, but there are various areas that have been identified that would need that type of dialogue with stakeholders. And we'll keep doing identifying those areas and talking to industry players around it. Petroleum pipelines industry regulation. Again, Chair, same set of programs, but the specific KPI, setting of tariffs there, pipeline tariff, as well as approval of storage and loading facility tariff. KPI, the Transnet pipeline tariff is something that we have to approve every year by a particular time. The department has even specified the week in which they'd like us to approve this one, and we've got that now sorted. And Chair, that interesting target there that says approved tariffs for Chevron. All along, our pipeline tariff application has been from Transnet, SOE. But Chevron has applied for starters for construction of a pipeline, and now they've applied for tariffs that they will charge third parties when they use that particular pipeline. And we just need to approve it so that the industry knows what they will be paying to Chevron if they do use that particular pipeline. Percentage of license storage and loading facilities approved, 40%. Rather low, but work in progress can move in time. Updated published storage tariffs. Again, therefore, for regulatory certainty, we published the tariff and players would know, and industry would know what they would have to pay if they used particular storage facilities. We are also conducting a benchmark study on storage tariffs because we just felt that we needed to have a sense of what's happening in that particular area. So we'll do a transversal benchmarking and benchmarking with other countries as well that are similar to ours. And then in terms of updated published financial information, we will publish that. We normally do it on our website. That would also assist with empowerment of general industry and customers when they're dealing with their particular players in that space. Processing of licenses and registration under Program 2. Percentage of licenses approved within statutory deadlines, 100%. Very interesting unit two, not the year 11-12. They were sitting at 50%, and from 11-12 to now, they've moved it to 100%. So, you know, the refinement of processes is yielding results. We'll have to find other things to incentivize them around. The number of suspected unlicensed facilities investigated, today we've set a target there of 5. But it's another one that we're looking at increasing so that we bring as many of the players in the net as soon as is possible. Program 3, compliance monitoring and enforcement. Infrastructure utilization reports, completion of assessment reports, HDSA reporting, storage allocation reporting, and reporting on specified license implementation, and loading facilities access principles. So, number of reports, 2. Chairperson here, this KPI is meant to do the double checking. So on the one side, you granted an entity money for them to build infrastructure, but whether or not they're utilizing that infrastructure optimally is another issue, and that's how you also get your prudently incurred costs. So we're looking at doing that twice a year. Percentage of reports analyzed and ready for approval, noting amounts to approval in certain instances within the organization. We're looking at 90% of those. Published status report on HDSA indicators based on the percentage of licenses. So we're looking at 70% of licenses giving us that information. At some point, we were not getting cooperation from the players around HDSA indicators. It has improved, and now we've moved it to 70%, because once you measure it, people will start doing it in earnest. And then published storage allocation mechanism based on the percentage of licenses. Chairperson has, similarly to what I was talking about in gas, allocation mechanism also shows the extent to which product is kept within particular facilities, so that as a regulator we can know how much of the facilities the existing operators are using, and that the open space can be utilized for both competition and transformation. It's proven to be a very difficult area, but we are making some progress there, Chairperson. And we're then looking at the implementation of the pipeline and loading facility access principles again, third-party access there. We're trying to make sure that there's third-party access on the pipeline and loading facilities. We're targeting two reports, but it's two reports that relate to particular facilities, so the work is quite substantive. Program 4, resolution of complaints. This department takes a very simple view. All complaints received, 100% of them, must be investigated and reported on within 60 days. Very high standard. We're hoping that we can move the rest of the units towards this type of standard of performance. Program 5, setting of rules, guidelines, and codes within the petroleum pipeline sector. Establishing of licensing guidelines, tariff guidelines. We have what we call an FAQ, frequently asked questions document on tariff application. So essentially it's like a recipe book of how you apply for tariff approval in the pipeline space. So I'm this operator, this is what I want to do. The first step is this, the second step is that, the third step is that. We have that. I again, it's one of those things that we're looking to do across the organizations, because it does make, it does simplify things, and we're looking at a review of how often that document is reviewed. Guidelines for calculation of the starting regulatory asset base. This is important towards compliance with the regulatory reporting manuals. And when we started with this issue, we just couldn't believe what we found out in the industry. So person who related to this, we did it just done with the FCOM application with the MYPD2. We're finding that with the petroleum industry, they don't even know what they own. Yes. So it's important to have the correct starting regulatory asset base, otherwise the rest of the calculations are off. And then, of course, there's a minimum information requirement. This is meant to deal with information asymmetry. And also how we contribute towards the alignment between different policies and methodologies that we utilize in this space. So at the KPI level, the license guidelines will be updated annually. Tariff guidelines updated annually. FAQs approved annually. Approved guidelines. What we need to do here is just got to get to a point where under the current financial year we approve a guideline, so that we then get the people who own storage facilities to start working according to that. And we then want to approve an updated MIRTA, or minimum information requirements for transmission for tariff applications, published on the website, so that the players can find it easily and apply it with similar ease. And then, of course, a contribution towards alignment between Petroleum Pipelines Act, Petroleum Pipelines Levies Act, and government policies and regulations. We will do quarterly, and we'll monitor that quarterly. Program 6, from a petroleum pipeline's point of view, the unit would like to see itself with an approved implementation plan for findings and recommendations on investigated infrastructure and bottlenecks in the petroleum pipeline infrastructure in Durban. Number of reports on the...
Durban.
Number of reports on the inland supply forecast biannually. We do the forecast for what the volumes would look like inland, and then we'll monitor whether or not the players are keeping to those numbers. And then this unit has relatively implemented the RRM for financial information, mostly with their players. There are not too many. But the big issue there is the non-financial information, and for the current financial year, they're looking to finalize the reporting manual for non-financial information, that NFI stands for. Okay. Chairperson, we are now going to move across to the cross-cutting regulation issues. We split our issues in terms of the different industries, and then where issues are applicable to all industries, we cut them, we name them as cross-cutting. And essentially, for the cross-cutting issues, it's Program 6, establishing NERSA as an efficient and effective regulator. Again, there we're talking to benchmarking, regulatory decisions by category, benchmarking regulatory decisions and regulatory impact, researching on new sources of energy, the requirement in terms of one of the acts, stakeholder engagement and education, as well as approved proposals and comments on policy changes. And if one makes it by KPI, that's what one is looking at. We've seen the first of these research reports being prepared within the organization, and we're looking for a way of announcing to stakeholders, and possibly will be a stakeholder interaction point as well. And we're looking at holistically 25 engagements. So over and above the industry-specific engagements with stakeholders, organizationally we think that we should get 25 going. And it's a beginning. We'll look at improving it over time as we move along. And then approved proposals, it's as and when these issues arise, but the key thing is that an act shouldn't be amended without us knowing and us responding to that particular process. So that's the target there. Organizationally, again, most of those KPIs relate to Program 6, making sure that we keep the mission oiled and working functional. So it's issues relating really to ensuring that we achieve a very high amount of the annual performance plan, that the organizational structure is always solved, continuous development and training of staff, customer satisfaction. Chairperson is sitting at 68% because it's a baseline. It will improve as we move along. Annual audit, unqualified, no stories there. And the creditor payment period, because it's monitored at such a high level in the country within the presidency, we also keep it on our radar screen. And there we're saying 100% of all creditors paid within 30 days. No negotiation, and we've achieved fairly well on that. Chairperson, we're now moving to the budgeting and the funding. One of the key principles that we operate according to is that the industries shouldn't cross-subsidize each other. So generally, all direct costs attributable to a specific industry are allocated to that industry. However, there are common costs that are then incurred by the organization, and the agreed allocation ratio for those is 58% to electricity, 21% to petroleum pipelines, and 21% to piped gas. Staff complement as well, attributed to industry-specific function, is used to allocate the common costs that I've just referred to. And Chairperson, there's the slide that shows the actual numbers. And that other chair is an issue that we keep coming back with to this committee. And when we thought our problems are getting resolved, we're finding that it's something that is perennial. It does remain on our account. So whilst we're whittling down the over-recovery in the electricity space, in the financial year that's coming to an end, we've made an over-recovery in gas, so again, we're going to have to refund the industry and true up their accounts, so it looks like it's something that will stay in our lives for as long as we collect money in the way that we do, but we do account for it and show clearly how we refund industry. Budgeting by program chair, that's just to show that the numbers add up and that these programs are fully funded. So from program 1 to program 6, we have made provision for that. And that's what the numbers look like there. And chair, when we report ourselves, even internally, we now report according to the program and by division. Chairperson, in conclusion, we'd like to thank the Portfolio Committee for the opportunity to present our strategic plan and the annual performance plan as an organization. Ongoing refinement of processes is taking place, and we do hope that we'll achieve high levels of efficiency as an organization. As an organization, we are conscious of the regulatory burden we're imposing, and we strive to minimize that. We always seek to make sure that we create and contribute to regulatory certainty so that a conducive environment for attracting and ensuring orderly investment is created. Filling legislative gaps is a priority, and we have been working very well with the department in this space. And we do believe that we are up to meeting the regulatory challenge that of balancing the conflicting interests of suppliers and those of customers. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you very much, Cindy. That was more than a mouthful. No, don't worry about looking at time. One thing what one has learned is the significance of regulation in the energy sector. Uganda is listening there quietly. I'm not saying regulation as man. mandated to NERSA, but regulation in the energy sector is very fundamental. It's not just about ensuring compliance, but it's also it is a very strong facilitative element because we also make reference to things like investment, you know, catering for customers, you know, not just the suppliers who have to comply. It's a very interesting area, but it's not for me to make questions and comments for now. Honourable members, Honourable Frailing, Mema Tibela, Mafe Gassin, Prof, and Pungane, in that order.
Hi, thank you, Chair. And yes, this was a mouthful of a presentation, and there's certainly a lot of issues that have been brought up through it. So if you'll permit me, I've got quite a few questions, if I can ask them. The first one is that around the latest tariff determination for the next 5 years for Eskom, and I think that you handled it particularly well, and I think the whole country breathed a collective sigh of relief when you came with your ruling of the 8%. I'm not sure if Eskom breathed a sigh of relief, however, and I think that we have certainly seen them kind of struggling to meet some of their commitments in terms of what you've done there.
Don't worry. They are still going to pay us a visit. We'll have a chit chat with them. But fine for your comment, no. But don't stress that much.
Okay, it's not me stressing, it's Eskom. But but no, I mean, the reason why I ask this though is that we have moved now away from a 3-year determination to a 5-year determination, and I think that is good for certainty. But the concern that I'm picking up among certain industry players is that how rigid is this determination going to be? Will it be revisited at some point in terms of if Eskom suddenly feels that it's in a very pressurized situation and it has to come to you guys to ask for a bigger increase? Is this something that's going to be entertained? Also, I mean, what we heard last week is that the nuclear program is now non-negotiable, apparently. And in Eskom's application, it in fact gave an indication of what that would mean for electricity pricing going forward, that it would require about 20 to 24% year-on-year increases for 5 years. So if this nuclear program is now deemed non-negotiable, and we would have to pay for it within this tariff determination, do you foresee us having to revisit this tariff determination, and will that lead to a sharp increase in electricity prices? I'll be interested in your response on that. And then when we look at, I know that you've now tackled the very thorny issue, or at least it's been pushed to you by Eskom in terms of the BHP Billiton deal. And I know that I agree with the process that you're going to be undertaking. I mean, you've now decided to open it to public hearings, which I think is a great move, but it still comes down to the fact as to whether you feel that you have the jurisdiction to revisit this deal if it is so deemed in terms of the public hearings. And I ask this because it was originally signed off by NERSA, or one part of the deal was signed off by NERSA, by Mr. Nkwanazi, who now coincidentally is also the chairperson of BHP Billiton. Bit of a strange relationship. But I mean, do you feel, what is NERSA's feeling on this? Do you feel that you do have jurisdiction to in fact interfere with this particular contractual obligation that Eskom has entered into? I'd just be interested to hear your thoughts on that. Then on to other issues. I see that you have given an indication around tariffs for storage for fuel tanks. What I have heard before in the industry, however, is that some of the tariffs that have been awarded for storage has created a disincentive for petrol companies to, in fact, store their petrol there and has led to shortages before in the inland area. Is this something that you've investigated, and do you feel that your tariffs aren't going to act as a necessary disincentive on that? Then I also wanted to find out, I mean, obviously it's been in the news a lot lately with regards to the delays at Medupi and Kasili. And I know that there are penalty clauses that are contained within the contracts with both Alstom and Hitachi. Has NERSA got a role in ensuring that those penalty clauses are in fact invoked? And have you actually checked to see whether they have been invoked at this point? Because, I mean, from our indication, Eskom seems loath to invoke them just yet while they're busy negotiating with them. What is your role in terms of ensuring that that gets done? Then just moving to the municipality side, I mean, I'm glad to see that you've allowed a kind of customized IBT, the inclining block tariff. And I'm a bit conflicted with inclining block tariffs, and it's a problem, I think, that is due to our institutional arrangements around electricity. Because on the one hand, while I think inclining block tariffs certainly act as an incentive for the residential user to do energy efficiency, it acts as a disincentive for municipalities to in fact encourage energy efficiency and to encourage things such as introducing reverse metering so that we can, so people can put solar panels on their roof. And the way that that works is that if you've got your very high-end users going very aggressive on energy efficiency or in fact putting solar panels on their roof, it moves them down into a lower block, has a huge impact on the revenue base of those municipalities. So have you looked at these particular issues and the kinds of disincentives that operate on that level, and what do you suggest we do in terms of dealing with those particular things? And then just lastly, just about the Chevron pipeline that you talked about here, I'm just interested as to which pipeline that is. Is it a new one that's going to be constructed, or is it the one that connects with Saldanha at the moment that comes down there? And just if it is a new one, what are the kind of costs that we're looking at, and where exactly is this pipeline? Thanks, I'll leave it for now.
Just before we go any further, Mrs. Pumzile, or Mrs. Pindile, I would rather it's up to you about the bulletin thing, because it's a very sensitive issue. I've been monitoring personally as a chair. If one of them, Freling, would let's give NERSA space to conclude it, and let's make a deal. You'll come and brief us. You may even look at whether we could even invite Bulletin and Eskom at that stage. You know, sometimes things get a little bit sensitive at this stage, you know, because the regulator is supposed to be independent. Of course, we'll watch you as to whether you're working according to rules, that's all. And also, I'm uneasy, man, about the Mid-UP area, as to whether you play into that space, you know. Because also it's a hot potato. I know right now the Eskom is accounting to public enterprise, you know, at S35. How one would have loved Eskom to be here when you'd be applying your mind on that. I'm not trying to dampen or suppress this, but it's just that, you know, when it comes to some of the sensitive things, one would rather have the other player in. So, in essence, I'm pondering to say, why don't you keep this and flag it, Mr. Kotse, but make sure that as we remote our program, we then bring them back, because the issue of electricity challenges, you know, are just snowballing, if you saw today's business day. So I would prefer that we revisit, but we bring in the various other partners, and then we can go through it. As a portfolio committee, we are charged with to look at all of that. But one wants to ensure that there's a balanced view, you know, when we handle such things. But the other questions are fine. Mamatibe.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, NERSA. Thank you for Limpopo.
Limpopo.
As we all know that we had our best students from Limpopo in the whole country. So I'm saying to NERSA, please keep it up. Don't forget our rural kids from as far as Limpopo, from Gauteng, you know. Because people who are always gaining are people around you people. I my question is on the LPG storage. Last time we had that Chevron had also mentioned that it had a lot of storage in Ladysmith. How far are you with it? Is it online yet or what? And also in terms of the liquid fuels,
there was a reverse stock of capacity there in the DOE. The DOE indicated there was planned vision, revision of legislation for the 20-year liquid fuels infrastructure. How far is it now? Thank you.
My further thing?
Thank you, Chair. That was an extremely comprehensive report. Lots of thought, obviously, but you've made lots of commitments, lots of refinement. I just want to, just as a side, if possible, if by the next 6 months through to the committee through our chairperson, if you could just report back and say how far you people are, because you there's a lot of work here, and just so that we all know that you are on track. My concern really is around the municipalities, and while it's heartening about the MIPD, the three-year determination, is that, as Honourable Frank asked, is that set in stone? Because right now, going forward, when you look at the hotspots, the service delivery hotspots, it's around essentially water and electricity. And the people on the ground really don't understand what is working or not working or how it should be working. How is NERSA looking at maybe trying to capacitate the municipalities that are in that kind of problem? And we know that we have it at different levels, but what else are you people trying to do to get the messages across, particularly at the municipality level? Thanks.
Prof, we'll just go down the line, Pungan.
Thank you, Chair. My questions are going to be more technical. I'm trying to marry these two books, big one and this one. I'll start with your slide 20, 21, and 22. And in those slides, let me take an example. For example, we are saying slide 20. Generation, that electricity industry regulation. Under generation, you say approved 47 renewable energy generation licenses. I don't know if 47 out of 100, 47 out of the same thing. For example, if you talk about distribution, they're saying it is distributed 9 distribution licenses were issued. Is it out of 20 applications, out of it will be the same kind of story on our slide 22. I take you to the big book and on benchmarking. So on page 58 on benchmarking, you said to benchmark regulatory decisions against international best practice. And you said your baseline was published regulatory decisions are not benchmarked. And when I go to your slide, if you go to page 90 of the book, it is talking about benchmarking of them. That is one of those things that you need to do. I take you now to slide 49. Slide 49, I'm trying to marry your benchmarking, moving out of what was said in page 8. That means now you are moving and having that benchmarking. I take you back again to page 8 of the big book. In the big book on page 58, when you're talking about to develop the research agenda for the organization on other new sources of energy, your baseline there said no work or research has been done. The question that I have then is to why is it that nothing has been done on that front? I take you to page 51 of the big book. page 51 of the textbook, we are saying under to ensure fairness and equity in the pipe gas market. Your baseline there says currently investigations into complaints by customers are taking over 12 months to be completed. This means 3 to 6 customers who may suffer harm from the alleged unfair practice. That is your 51. I do not know your 94 in the slide, where it is addressing that. When you go to slide 94, I'm not sure whether it is referring to that gas or something else. In your slide 94, sorry, to, I'm trying to. In your slide 94, you are talking about KPI of 100%. Complaints received, investigated, and concluded in line with legal requirements. Complaints, you are saying the 100% of complaints received, investigated, and reported on within 60 days. Is that the same complaint or a different complaint with one that was taking a year or more for leading to problems? I confine myself now to the big book. I take you to page 17 of the big book. If I'm too long, sir, you stop me so that I allow others and come later. Feel free to stop me at any time.
How many questions to book?
Any questions?
If it's make that last one, then you'll have others in the second round.
Let me take you to page 17 of the big book. On page 17 of the big book, fourth paragraph from the bottom. The national government's renewed sense of urgency and focus on accelerated delivery of services is evident in the quantum of targets set, such as, amongst others, the 100% access to electricity by 2014. I was trying to contrast that with the presentation the chair will remind me here, where I took them to Hamra, say what is happening in the villages as far as electricity. And when I made my calculations from what they were giving us, it would take us 17 years to complete. And here you are saying we are going to be doing that by 2014. I'm not sure which one to believe. I'll stop there for now, sir. I'll come back for 20 more questions.
For now, sure. Pungane, ne?
Thank you, Chair. My first question, let me just appreciate the work that has been done. It's wonderful work. The question that I have in terms of your achievements, you spoke in terms of 13 licenses that are being revoked. If you can be able to get a clarity in terms of who were those people that, you know, you revoked the license from? Probably what are the circumstances, whether are we envisaging, probably are there any HDIs that are affected, and if they are, what other measures are you having in order to assist them, in order for them to reset their status and correct the mistakes that they have done. The other issue goes to your your strategic plan, your outcome for that speaks in terms of the decent employment. My question there is that you were raising aspects in saying that in terms of the outcome for you've raised, or in terms of through your program of implementation, there has been a lot of employment that has been created in contributing to the economic growth. My question is that this for me, it's a little bit too open or too vast for me to understand, because you may say you've produced or created employment, but if it can be, you know, be justified by pointing out in terms of those specific employment that has been taken through, and so that at least you can have another base to say you've created hundreds of employment, and that can be feasible, you know, being seen. Because those are type of achievements that as a country must acknowledge. But once I say in the process of us approving some certain legislation, we've created employment in terms of us overseeing the performance of NERSA, we've created employment, but you cannot be able to say a new CEO is being appointed in the name of Pindi. It wouldn't make sense. But if I can just say, through us ensuring that all the pronouncement of the president will fill up most of the quiet jobs that are critical. The CEO of NERSA has been appointed as one example. You know, it should give an example. So I'm trying in terms of understanding in terms of that. The other issue that you raised in terms of the challenges that you raised, it was in terms of the establishment of the consumers forum. I heard you saying that probably most of the challenges that there should be a regulation that has been issued by the minister, but it has not been issued yet. As the portfolio committee, probably one of our responsibilities to ensure that at least we unlock some kind of glitches. If you can be able to give us if the department can be able to explain, Chair, through your Chair, that what was the problem, why were there delays in terms of putting that regulation in establishing those consumer forums, so that at least we can be able to check whether can we assist if ever there are any problems there and there.
That one for DOE. Babu Kanduko.
Indeed, Chair. Let me, in order for me to allow Honorable Slawezo to ask questions, one of my last question is related to the security supply in the inland. I heard you saying you're going to try, you know, you've strengthened your monitoring strategies in ensuring that you look at the issue that is a shortage there. The crisis that is also emanated was that there's been less storage capacity there in the inland area. My probably I would say monitoring of the security supply will not be enough, but instead we should be able to increase the storage capacity, and then ensuring that at least there's enough security supply, because every time when you're going to have a problem of the petrol shortage or diesel shortages in the inland, there has been any problem in the coastal areas. It's a problem. It's a very serious problem. People are always crying, but you must be able to do some more work. But my request is that let's deal with the issues of putting more storage capacity in preventing the future challenges. But I think the other issues, Honorable Prof is asked in terms of the specific numbers, in terms of your target outcomes, because I think the Prof has asked them adequately. Thank you, Chief.
I'll be the first
to
get
wrong.
Too much
for
you.
uyakucabangela ke sesithini uyabona ukuthi you've got supporter in the committee. I usually see it's quite surprising because regulators are usually unpopular. Well, nanko ke bayakuthanda ke sesa. Honourable members, let's just take a break, give INRSA and the department some time to prepare for responses. 10 minute break, please.
Thank you.
Can you settle, people? Nersa, the floor is yours. Nersa and DOE, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, in the hustle, when I started, I omitted to introduce my team members and much as you call them part of the furniture, I suppose. So, proper that I introduce them. To my immediate left is Esther Fillion, Senior Manager for Performance Management and Planning, and to the other side is Zach Lombard, the Acting CFO, and they will assist me as well in answering some of the questions. Thank you, Chair. Chair, on the first question from Member Hreiling around the 3 to 5 year control period, just at a general level to indicate that it is always better to have longer control periods than shorter control periods. So you create much more certainty, you send firmer price signals if you do that. So we are glad to see that we are increasing the period over time, and hopefully one will end up at a longer control period for the country. And with longer control periods, inevitably comes in reopening of these types of determinations. And the instances of reopeners are very clear in the rules of MYPD. And once those are triggered, then the regulator has to reopen the process, and it can be done on application by an operator, or the regulator can meromotive do it. So at this point in time, one cannot anticipate whether or not it would be reopened. If one looks at previous experience, we've had 2 3-year MYPDs The first one was reopened almost every year, and it was better with the second period. So I think we're getting better at projections, we're getting better at sticking to what we promised as an institution generally, and the operator as well. So, Chairperson, the only way to respond to that, the only thing we can say to the question is, should the triggers for reopening the MYPD3 be met, the regulator will have no option but to then follow due process for the reopener. And we cannot say whether or not nuclear would be the reason why it is reopened or any other, because the funding arrangements are not finalized. Ordinarily, the renewables could have been a cause for reopening, but given the funding arrangements that were finally done for that particular particular projects, it ended up working for everybody, and no reopeners were required. So we will deal with it as it arises. But generally, what we're saying is that we will prepare longer control periods than shorter ones. So, Chair, the second question I will leave. Related to bulletin, thank you for the retrieve. Otherwise, I'm not given a regulatory response chance, but I can't anticipate the decision. And the third question related to storage tariffs, whether or not storage tariffs are a disincentive. Chairperson, would be fascinated to interact with anybody who alleges that, because the methodology we utilize for determining storage facilities is a methodology that allows operators to recover their investment and a reasonable return. And in fact, we are flexible. We've got two methodologies that we allow. So we would be surprised as an energy regulator that because of the level of tariffs in the storage space, we have disincentivized storage. There are other reasons why operators and oil companies have not been investing in storage, and they've got to do with the global petroleum products output and crude and all of that, and that's what we have observed. In fact, as a country, there was a big debate about whether or not further refining capacity is required, with oil companies saying, no, you don't need it, we can refine also in import, and government saying, no, we need to create refining capacity. So I think the reasons for lack of storage would go more to business reasons rather than being a function of the tariffs, the storage tariffs that we have been granted. We are, however, doing a regulatory impact assessment, so we will look at those tariffs and see whether or not indeed they could have resulted in a disincentive. But at the moment, that wasn't the feedback we got from the industry. Then there was a question on Nirupi and Gusile, which will also take our guidance from the chair and move to question five around IBT. Generally, the energy efficiency program in the country is challenged by the fact that, for starters, we have to shift the country from a mentality of surplus to a mentality of responsible use. So that's generally everybody's orientation is towards surpluses. Electricity has always been surplus in this country, and it would take a lot to move there. Secondly, the issue is then complicated by the fact that electricity is a source of revenue for municipalities. And unfortunately, the discourse in the country has always been about municipality electricity equals revenue. We have never had the discourse from the other point of view. So municipalities are sitting with artificial revenue. 66% of municipalities in the country are sitting with artificial revenues from electricity, and the discourse is that of accepting that they are entitled to it and they should get it and whatever it is. However, we are looking at issues of energy efficiencies in relation to municipalities, and in discussion with the Department of Energy, we are looking to ensure that municipalities are incentivized to also embark on energy efficiency in interventions. One of the implementation challenges with how we have dealt with EE up until now has been the fact that the funds have sat with ESCOM. So ESCOM has either had first call on the money, or the money has been seen as a kit that's only available for ESCOM. Municipalities didn't quite understand that they could also access energy efficiency funds if they embark on intervention. So we're looking at a combination of ensuring that all of those things come together so that ultimately we end up at the correct place, which is appropriate, efficient use of energy without necessarily harming those who are currently benefiting from it. But generally, the initial response from municipalities was that we don't like EE because it's going to drop our revenue levels. But the Department of Energy has been engaging with them, and SALGA is beginning to talk energy efficiency, so hopefully it will cascade through to municipalities. Chairperson, the question on the Chevron pipeline. The application related to both pipelines, the one in Saldanha and another one from the Cape Town Harbour to the refinery. Both pipelines go towards the refinery. And the numbers are as follows. The annual revenue to be made out of that is 78 million. The liters to be stored of crude there or to be moved is 8.8 billion liters. And the regulatory asset base is 661 million. It's quite a reasonable. It's a reasonable investment that says we're doing something right as a country for an entity like Chevron to spend so much money in improving its capacity in that particular space. If I then move to questions from Mama Tibela, one related to LPG storage. We did raise a concern about LPG storage within the Saldanha Bay, that the facility there was being closed and we were not seeing as a regulator where the alternative was coming from. However, we have since seen that on the side of the Eastern Cape through the port of Mwaka, there's some developments that are coming through there, so some LPG storage capacity at least will be kept neutral. And as a regulator, we did share the fact that we had approved an application by one operator in Gauteng to store LPG gas as well. So we are also seeing some investments, interesting investments in the LPG space. The questions around Chevron and Ladysmith, the point there is that what we've seen is that the oil companies have reacted to the route of the petroleum, of the NMPG. In the past, it used to go past that area, Ladysmith, Newcastle, and the Free State, and come up. And now the way they've built it, it bypasses those areas. So as a natural function, the storage capacity that was built in response to the pipeline that was moving there is no longer required. However, we're getting new applications along the new route of the pipeline. So it's sort of being made up, but overall, we're seeing higher levels of revocation of storage license applications than the construction of those. And it's a bigger issue that the Department of Energy is looking at as well. The revision of the 20-year liquid master plan, liquid fuel master plan, is a program of the department. We participate, like all other stakeholders, on that particular program. And yes, we have enjoyed the audience of the department on some of the issues we've had to raise around that particular issue. Chairperson, through you. Member Ferguson asked whether we could be reporting in another 6 months. Chairperson, we are happy to do that. We do file 3-monthly reports or quarterly reports with the department indicating how we've performed against the various KPIs. And we are happy to share those reports with the portfolio committee to come chair on a 6-monthly basis to indicate how we are moving relative to the plan. The question around municipalities started at asking whether or not the guidelines are set in stone. The municipal guidelines are set in stone. They are annual determinations, they're not 3-year determinations. So if there's a problem in the 1 year, there's always scope to fix it the following year. So we generally do not like for municipalities to ask for different. However, there are bases for reopeners. So I think 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, we had to reopen a city power application where they had demonstrated why it was necessary for them to get a different determination than the one that NERSA has given initially. But generally, we do not encourage municipalities to reopen the tariff determinations because they are for annual they're done on an annual basis. And then there was a question around whether or not NERSA assists municipalities with capacity, particularly in areas of service delivery hotspots. Generally, as a regulator, we have highlighted capacity shortcomings for municipalities and advised what kind of capacity they should go and get. We do not have capacity that we can lend to municipalities as a regulator ourselves, so such as it would be conflicted for us to do so, because then we can't come back and be policemen after sending our own stuff in there. However, we have worked with municipalities to indicate to them
what needs to be done and what type of resources they need to get. And in terms of messaging, we do participate in responsible messaging. If I take one instance where we intervened in a community dispute, said dispute in the community of Chawela and Soweto, where councillors' houses were burnt because people were unhappy with meters that had been installed by Eskom, prepaid meters that had been installed by Eskom, we were called upon to act as referees of sorts. So the community said, we want NERSA to come here. If NERSA investigates and inspects these meters and says that these meters are fine, then we're happy to pay. And indeed, we did that. We came in, and together with SABS, we had the meters checked. We presented the feedback to the community, and the protestation disappeared, and people are now paying. So we have played a positive role in that sense when we are specifically invited and using our authority under dispute resolution. But generally, we can't just come in when there are those disputes. We are a regulatory entity. We also tend to want to see whether the municipality is doing the right thing. Yes. The questions that were asked by Prof, let me see if we can be as systematic as he was. So he took us back to slides 20, 21, 22. And the first question, the question generally on those slides were 47 out of how much? 9 out of how much? As a regulator, we sit in an interesting place because we, at the best of times, are dependent on applications that come through our door. So the other way of reflecting this would have been 100% of all RE generation applications were processed. The 47 is what came through the door, and we can't sit and set a target that we want 100 applications for RE. Those are investment decisions based on what people perceive as the investment climate and those types of things. So this is 100% of what came through, and all 47 that applied were granted, the same as that 9. All 9 that applied got them, and the same goes with all the others. We are not in a position to set a target that we want X number of people to apply because it's investor-driven. The other questions you asked related to gas, again, it's investor-driven. The petroleum pipelines one, the investors ready to construct their storage facilities, they then approach us. If they're not, they do not. So perhaps we should find a way of telling the story in a slightly more complete sense than to leave it half by just saying 47 and not indicating instead of how much. So overall what we're saying is that everybody who applied got their applications granted within the stipulated time. Page 58 of the stretch plan document, as well as slide 49, and I'll use that as a proxy for all other questions that look like that one. On page 58 of the book, we do indicate that on the bench line, we say that regulatory decisions are not benchmarked. So we don't have a baseline because up until this point in time, we were not benchmarking our decisions. When we approved this document, which is a year old already, we didn't have. However, by 1 year later, when I'm presenting to this committee, we actually did do, we started the process of benchmarking. So we had identified that we needed to benchmark. We hadn't done it up until then. We have now started doing it, and then we use it as a baseline to then measure ourselves going forward. So as a proxy to all those questions, where we hadn't done it, at the time the plan was put together, we had never done it. It was a newly identified activity, so there's no baseline. But going forward, the work that we are doing will be a baseline. And so the research report, for instance, Chairperson, through you, we have had the first research report coming through from the piped gas unit on sources of energy. It was a powerful, beautifully written report about sources of gas on the continent. And they followed it through. They traced it all with all the facts and figures of what's available and what's been commercially exploited, what's not been. So those exercises were then conducted as a result of us setting ourselves the target of doing so. And now that those are in, we have a baseline. Into the future, we can incentivize the team to do a little bit more. So if Prof doesn't mind, I would then say that deals with the two questions he raised that were in that vein. The fourth question related to page 17 of the strategy plan document, where we indicate that the issues of 100% access. What we're saying here is that government set itself a target of 100% access to electricity by 2014. That's the target that government has set itself. And as NERSA, we have to operate within government policy. So what we would have done is to, in our determination, make an allowance for an electrification rate that would meet that target. But based on the drawdowns, based on the impact of that on the tariff, based on how those projects are implemented, we are also seeing that, in fact, if you look at the total numbers of electrification per annum now, that target won't be met. But that was the target that government had set for itself, and what we sought to do is, given where we're located, to facilitate that government meets that target for itself. So we quite concede that the government is likely not to meet that target, but that's the target they had set for themselves. We did what we can to facilitate them meeting it by making funds available for the implementation of the electrification project or process. The revocations, the certain revocations, the questions from Member Hadi. Generally, as I had highlighted initially, we had observed as a regulator that a lot of major oil companies are applying to revoke licenses that they had been given in the past, which is a requirement of the law. You get given a license and you don't use the facility, revoke it, return it to the regulator. Mostly, it's the major oil companies. There are no HDIs involved in those revocations. I can trot them out. It's been a lot of BP, a lot of Engen. Chevron to an extent, but BP and Engen have been quite busy applying for revocation of licenses. In some instances, they sell them to other operators. In other instances, they just revoke and walk away and leave their assets standing there. What we are seeing is that perhaps therein lies the opportunity for the transformation and introduction of HDIs, but there are no HDIs that have applied for revocation of licenses. So there would not have been measures required for HDIs to be assisted if they are the ones who are closing because they are getting into trouble as businesses. However, what we do is we keep that information on our website so that if HDIs are looking for opportunities in storage, that information is there. It's in the open. They can come and apply for those licenses. They won't be told by the original operator that, no, I still own that thing when they no longer own it. So that's the slight role that we play in that particular space. In relation to the second question around outcome 4, decent employment, a lot of employment created, slide 28. So if you look at the slide, you'll see that we have carefully worded what we say there. Electricity and energy in general are economic growth supporting type of services. So we're not saying that we achieved any job creation or any economic growth, but what we're saying is that by ensuring that people continue to invest in electricity, people continue to expand in the electricity infrastructure and other energy infrastructure, we have made economic activity possible in the country. So we're saying that we create a precondition towards the achievement of that outcome at a national level. So we haven't directly created jobs as NERSA. We employ small number of 156 people, that's all, and at best it will be 177 at the moment. So we didn't, and if I said that in my presentation, then I apologize, because then I might have misrepresented.
We play a catalytic role,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Even with the renewables, we're actually looking at the numbers, and what we have been asked to do is to take the social obligations that the department has imposed and incorporate them into the lesson so that we can monitor that the investors are doing what they said they would do. We looked at the jobs to be created through those projects, but again, two steps removed from us, so we haven't created any jobs. So if we have created that impression, we apologize. The Consumer Forum regulations, Mr. Ganda will cover them, but Chair, we are communicating with the department quite lively on this issue. In our meetings with the Director General, I was present when she instructed her team to make sure that those regulations are finalized because they should just get out of the way. So it's not a big issue that needs any major interventions. It's just the department must organize itself and get the rules, the regulations passed so that we can then enforce at the moment we can only persuade entities to establish the consumer forums. The security of
the time lapse is when it's important if you don't implement that resolution.
Well, the department will respond, not NAFSA. However, the emphasis is that the opportunity cost is that if you do invest on persuasion, by the time you have to do enforcement to regulations, there'll be fewer people to actually do a little bit of shisamba. Because we have persuaded others. In fact, I think those are the things, those are the one kind of members who actually buy in into that initiative, because they've agreed and participated on their own volition by through persuasion. I'd like us to highlight, to just keep that in mind when I'm a member. Thank you, Susan Kubage.
So, just coming to the last question around security of supply and the strengthening of monitoring strategies. And the question there was a direct one. Can storage capacity be increased inland to prevent future bottlenecks? This is one of those questions where I would say yes, possibly we need to do that. However, the investors must see the business case for doing that. What we had observed is that all of the players, all at the same time, held back in increasing storage capacity inland. And it's a question that we are grappling with ourselves, but the department more importantly, because there must be something we're not doing right to get them to put the dollars on the ground. We are aware, though, Chair, that a few of them will start moving now that the issues around cleaner fuel specs are moving towards finalization. We are seeing some making some noises around investing in further storage capacity inland. But there's a lot that depends on it. That there's a lot that has to happen before that type of investment are done. The big investment that the country did was to ensure that the pipeline is built and it brings the product into inland. So let's deal with those issues that relate, or we are rather focusing on those issues that relate to the pipeline at the moment. Yeah. Thank you, Chair.
And I think also the other thing is just I'm glad to honor members, I'm glad to have Uganda's around, is also the level of reciprocation with SIP as a whole. SIP is obviously triggering infrastructure, but on the top of infrastructure we expect more investments to be done. So once they expect more investments to be done, particularly economically, and even more houses being built, you then expect more energy to be used. So there's sort of that component, we always have to be alert. I'm just provoking everyone that as we roll out, we should always keep that in mind, that look, when you build more houses, when you have more mines, when you have all these IDZs, special economic zones, established, what are the energy needs? For that and from different angles, to what extent is that advancing our campaign from 5% to 20% gas penetration, let alone the electricity to HYL one and others, but just this new exciting area of advancing our gas market penetration. To what extent is that going to look, are there appetites from the gas industry, is there any adequate incentive for the gas industry companies once again to look at these new SIP initiated, areas, to say, look, it seems that there's adequate platform or conducive environment for us to go and invest from a gas perspective, once again, let alone electricity, because it's almost automatic, I'm throwing that to all members. Let's keep that in mind, whether at this level, even at a provincial level as well, to keep on monitoring that. Sure. So I think that's worth just strengthening that. Okay. And I'm sure also as we regularly interact with the department, we should also keep that in mind. Through the various careers and in energy careers, we should always check, you know, what are the potentials, what are the prospects of each of them, you know, how prepared. So I think also that's another most important thing, the level and extent of preparedness, you know, to respond to these, to energy demand as the seed gets rolled out, you know, down the line. Yeah, at least I should have a chance now in the second round. Oh, yes. Thanks for the reminder. That is love. Yeah, we made a deal.
Yes, I thought you were reneging from me, Chair. Chair, the presentation has been very good. And I thought for the first time that she is doing this to me. Even when she was in EDI, she used to give the kind of presentation that would have no hole to punch.
And if you could divulge, how do you know that?
I was a member of this committee then.
Oh.
I was a member of this committee when she was in EDI.
Oh,
she used
okay.
to come and present to us. And her presentations were never questioned.
Okay.
And this is where I come from. Nothing personal.
I'm a bit low, wasn't me.
No, I'm just wondering, that's what.
Chairperson, I just want to try and maybe link things a little bit. The IRP was referring to the deadline of 2014. And after the production of the NDP, National Development Plan, National Development Plan came with 2025, that 98% of South Africans must have electricity by 2025, yeah, which means the same dream, the change is there. We asked the same question to the DG in the meeting that we held previously, and the DG confirmed that the National Development Plan will now supersede, and the IRP will have to be changed accordingly in the review process. To go to the 2025. So the 2014, I think, does no longer carry water. Just two questions I want to put. One is, it would be nice, especially when addressing public representatives, in making presentations as good as this, to give some kind of a dream. And the dream question would be, how would you like to see South Africa look like after having regulated the processes leading up to electrifying South Africa by the time you will be proud, be it 2025 or when? But you know, that setting that goal that say, by this is what I wish to see, or what we wish to see as NERSA. That is lacking in this document. I looked into the mandate. The mandate only tells what your job is, to regulate and to follow the international standards in making sure that your job of regulation is done, is benchmarked against international standards. But nothing says about your dream as a regulator. That is the one question, whether you have a dream or you are just waking. As long as they come through your door, you regulate. And then what impact these things are to the society is not your thing. Then my second question is linked to non-grid, the regulation of non-grid, and that of nuclear, of course. I'm trying to make the two questions be one question because they're asking for the same thing. When you read the name, the National Energy Regulator of South Africa, that name seems to suggest, if I understand it well, that all matters relating to energy will be regulated by that regulator. And the actual practical situation is that we have your NNR for the National Nuclear Regulator for Nuclear, and it looks like someone else, I'm not sure who, is regulating the non-grid electricity. What is the thinking there? Are there some discussions, engagements somewhere there to try and create a one body that regulates energy for us? Or what is the situation? Thanks.
Yeah. Thanks, Ndereslao. Particularly your 2 points. They reinforce Sundile, some of the engagement we had. I remember very well in V475. Just as a comment, I think it's striking that one of the things that you have to, some of the outcomes you need to look into is cost-reflective tariffs that would encourage investments. And I take it at some stage, I wrote members, we need to not only engage with NERSA but with other players in this area and around that. It's important that we look into that. Some comments have been done, but just to add on customer education and clean energy education and empowerment, we kept on saying there's room for improvement. Now, yeah, of course, there's room for improvement if you only have 156 people for the whole country. But how creative are you to tap to other existing initiatives? Then I'm sure you will not come back and say there's room of improvement. You will tell us about a couple of things that you're doing. And as you can sense, my question is loaded. Because that is fairly fundamental. One of the strategic objectives is to have a regulatory environment that facilitates investments, which I suppose you've already been doing. The interest is that have you worked out any enhancement plan or any plan to enhance that? Because amongst other things, an interesting feature is the interest from investors, particularly international investors. Amongst things the honourable members they look into is that how structured, robust and dynamic is the regulatory environment before we put in our first dollar or euro in the energy sphere. So the interest is, I'm not assuming that they haven't been doing, but how to enhance it, given the pressures that we have for more energy. And also the you know, price fluctuations and other challenges that we get. For this following question, sorry if we have already responded one way or another, but I'm looking at your compliance, monitoring and enforcement of compliance. Once again, how will you enhance this area? It has kept on coming time and again. You know, we will have to keep a hawk's eye on this area, but for now, if you could just kick off by saying, how will you enhance compliance? The municipality experience comes in mind, not only that, but there could be others. Furthermore, do you have any preemptive measures in the creation of a fair balance between the needs of all stakeholders? Because that's actually quite a difficult thing to strike the balance between the needs of all. Some are supplying, some are consuming. Some look at bottom line. Some would like to have as low cost as possible. Your opinion on this one, you see yourself as facilitating, amongst other things, the efficiency. Of yourselves as a regulator, and what comes in mind is the restructuring of the sector once again. And the question is, are you okay in saying that that obviously would the restructuring of the sector would enhance your efficiency? You make reference to Eskom's approved transmission development plan. What comes in mind is ADAM. Is ADAM inside or outside this environment of the transmission development plan? I just assume there probably may be linkages, but I don't want to assume incorrectly. Monitoring of the implementation of MIPD3, does that include municipalities? Of course, we know that we still have to take up the municipal anglers as well in the MIPD3 process. That is just in getting to know the determination, but here is, would you be monitoring the municipalities, which is more complex? Establishment of consumer forums, yeah, it comes again. But also, I know that Eskom has got forums. How different are they? I'm just provoking this in the sense that one would like to see us avoiding duplication. Is there no risk of duplication or other forums going to be complementing one another? I think in terms of the tariff increases that may incentivize other modes of transport, you did raise a couple of challenges there, and I would like the department to make comments on that. Honourable members, I think this might need a revisit jointly with other committees, because we have handled this issue of the pipeline. And I'm sure we're also interested to know more and more as the pipeline is going to take other fuels beyond diesel. Also, what's going to be the situation regarding the old pipeline? This is coming with a new term now on slide 46, that of common carriage. Could you give us an example of this common carriage? And once again, just rehash, what's your strategy on this? Because things that always link to promotion of third-party access are quite complex in this industry, or even this specific field. On cross-cutting regulatory issues, you make reference to addressing information asymmetry. In trying to understand this, something comes in my mind, that of is it an area where this would need collaboration with the department on data management generally, or is it more of an internal exercise? Because once to talk of information, you know, our experience, and that's saved in time on the members, is that we're still grappling with challenges of having proper data and even managing it in the energy sector as a whole, so that we would know our consumption patterns sectorially and geographically. There's a comment in regarding the harmonization of regulatory processes, three laws, just as a slight small comment, I trust to both NASA and the department that from the amendments that are coming, you know, moves are afoot to address those challenges quite comprehensively. I mean, they may be short term, but also would be keen to hear a long term drive once again. To an extent, it links up with what I raised in VSOFA 75 and what has been reinforced by Andateslau by saying that what's your dream 2020 or 2025? There are linkages on that. I've already said something about SEEP, but now in this regard, you plan improved human resource policies, but I'm also saying that there's also human resource planning. Would you care to comment on your readiness for SEEP and how it would affect your readiness for the growth, or is it too early for now? Around enabling technology, which I suppose is going to be very helpful for NERSA in monitoring and doing whatever work, particularly when, you know, the energy sector is growing and becoming more complex. I see you make reference to improvement of IT systems and processes. That's very commendable, even when you highlight knowledge management, but smart grid, how do you factor into that one? I mean, Saredi has been very, very passionate, and we are just about to start a pilot, you know. Now, how far are you with that? Because we would be keen to see that a smart grid is coming in. You know, NERSA is on top of things. If, you know, should you be, you know, having a role to play? Because there's a great potential for smart grid to improve efficiencies. On the regulatory reporting manual, even if it's electronic updates electronically, and then from time to time we can work up briefings, that's an interesting area, particularly for metros, you know. The amount of inefficiencies, leakages and things, I suppose, could be addressed partially, one would say, by this exercise. And on behalf of the members, I'm just suggesting, you know, some keen interest. Because amongst other things, you know, it's fine to look at various forms, you know, new energies, growth and this and that, but also it's equally fundamental that we look at efficiencies, you know, maximize utilization of what is being generated right now. I hope I'm correct that amongst others that could also contribute to that. Program 5 on, oh, I can't remember, it's slide 67, setting rules, guidelines and codes for the regulation of the electricity industry. You have targets as one per year, but I'm just provoking you. Wouldn't that help if you could look at quarterly frequencies? It's only the reports on renewable energy that's going to be quarterly, but the energy efficiency and the DSM are annual. Maybe for the transmission development plan, because it's a big thing, but, you know, the interest is, shouldn't we really be rolling our sleeves and monitoring energy efficiency a little bit more frequent, in a sense? On licensing, program 2, why 50% only? Is it a tough area? Because I think that's one area that we begin to see licensing, you know, getting ramped up. The same with the program 4, the complaints and the initiated investigations. once again, program 2, I can't remember which one, it's slide 90. You say there are a number of suspected unlicensed facilities. I think this has come up in the past, but just once again, how does this happen? Because it's a dangerous thing if we're going to have unlicensed facilities just popping up from anywhere. Research reports on new sources of energy. What areas do you cover? And I assuming that others are doing the same research, is there no risk of duplication? I think this is the last. Oh, yeah. On staff undergoing training, why 80%? Because I assume that the NASA is one of the, how can I say, skills intensive institutions. Shouldn't you ramp up and go a little bit higher? Because we are really a very strategic, you know, institution. The assumption and the expectation is that your staff should really be checked up. The last one is, how are industries refunded during over recovery? Thank you. Oh, from my side, Prof. You wanted a follow up?
Thank you, sir. Let me start with slide 9. There, you say the number of end user forums established, but the problem is law not yet passed. As lawmakers, I'm curious how far that is. Is there anything that we need to do to push that? I take you to the big book on page 25. Now, I'm looking at this first page up to 62 now with a new perspective. Since those are just headlines for things to be sorted out later. Let me take you to page 26 then. In page 26, we are constantly referring to the gas act that needs to be reviewed. I think you referred to that even in page 73. What is the status of that? Is there something that we need to do to fast track that? In page 27, the fourth last bullet, the lack of unified petroleum regulations due to multiple regulators is resulting in boundary demarcation issues. I think that you are responding that to that on page 76. In page 76, they are saying presidential review on the Okando state creation of a super regulator and collapse all regulators. How far is that? Is it something that is happening now so that we get around that problem of many regulators? I got worried on page 27. I'm sure it is answered somewhere. The second last bullet on page 27, it says that why the filling of pools and training, particularly in financial skills, takes place. NASA will be partially reliant on consultants for the foreseeable future. I think that was theoretical then. You are not reliant on consultants. Let me take you to page 51. Now let's leave that. Let's go to page 55. I think that was asked just now. Let's leave that again. I'll take you to page 56. New entrants are discouraged by seemingly complicated licensing process. I take it that has been simplified as we speak. We no longer have that problem. I take you to page, I'm assuming on page 63, when you said 2012-2014, you meant 2012-2013. Do I take you to 73? The pipe gas industry regulations. The Gas Act Amendment was served at Cabinet May 2012. It's just that general concern for me. Are there any acts that you want us to assist to push through? I take you to page 78. There is a general concern, the very paragraph 5 there. There is a very concern of South Africa not taking advantage of these countries that are having oil. Tanzania and Mozambique found significant amounts of gas. Who is supposed to do that, what, in order to take advantage of that? Allow me to take you to page 84. On page 84, legal factors. At the number 2 there, it refers to ISMO. They're saying NESTA are not ready when the independent systems and market operation deal becomes operational. I'm not sure what that means. Where they are putting some
page. Sorry, Prof. Which page?
Page 84.
84.
Page 84. The very last paragraph at the bottom. It refers to ISMO. It says the NESA is not ready when the ISMO bill becomes operational. And above that, you are saying on the Electrical Regulation Act, you are complaining that NESTA's views were not listened to. They were not taken into consideration. Even in the second paragraph, you are concerned. That concern is in black and white. We need to take it up and see what is the problem. What are these legislators doing? Again, on 885, number 2, inconsistencies between Gas Act and agreement as well as competition law. That sounds serious to me if there's something that which needs to be lifted, if there's anything that needs to be done to sort that out. I take you to page 89. Highly, that is the third bullet, highly compliance focused due to the agreement and weak enforcement provisions of the Gas Act. Does that mean in the Gas Act there are some weak provisions that need to be amended? If that is, we need to lift that so that if there's anything that we can do. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Prof. In fact, Prof has provoked a couple of things, particularly the bottom of page 84 and the whole of page 85 in the big book. There are a couple of areas where you say nurses who is not taken into consideration, or nurses is not included, and also the readiness that comes up in various areas. If you could just take us, if there's an area on my pattern, I'm even concerned about number 2 in page 85. You say confusion and manipulation of loopholes. Is that part of this nyaga-nyaga, a fragmented regulation? You know, I know it's opening a can of worms, which tends to prove in any case, because we need to grapple with that. We've been sensing this fragmentation of regulation in this area, and also sometimes unnecessary tensions and all of that. But just as a closing remark, before I close the book, is that you say in page 78, all majors leaving South Africa, and there may be a gap in the market. I'm going to invite you and Petro SA to a lunch so that we can talk about it. Okay. Any other question on the members? If not, so over to you, sir.
Chairperson, thank you. I was saying that perhaps let me start with that page 84 and 85 of the strategic plan. What happened is that when we were addressing the risk factors, this is the SWOT analysis, and how we decided to word it was to say, what is the factor? What would be the impact if the factor is not addressed? And then what is NERSA doing to deal with it? NERSA's response. So the third column tells you what we are doing about it. So what we were saying, if I take the Electricity Regulation Amendment, Electricity Regulation Act and Electricity Pricing Policy under review, that's a factor of an act that could be amended. And what we're saying is that if the impact is not addressed, if we don't do anything about it as NERSA, what would happen? Our views would not be taken into consideration. However, our response to the factor is that we are going to conduct regulatory advocacy. So what we did in response to that possibility is active regulatory advocacy. So I suppose it's presentation issues, and perhaps we should look at it as an organization. Somebody would stop at the second column and say, ooh, these people are going to be missed by the boat. Then perhaps we need to relook how we articulate it in our documents. But we were just wanting to, for effect, to ourselves to say what would happen if you didn't respond, and actually what is your response. But Chair, if I go back right to the beginning of the set of questions and come with them, firstly, Members Lau asked the question around the IRP and the NDP. Generally speaking, the issue of universal access is a policy matter, government policy matter, in which as NERSA we advise and facilitate. So if there are contradictions between the government documents, it's a, you know, would say to the principal, please clarify it, because you're making it difficult for us to facilitate here at the bottom. So if one looked at it that way. So yes, our document is outdated, but I did say right at the beginning that this document was produced before the NDP was finalized. So we are going to have to review it in the light of the NDP, the IPEP, as well as the SIPs, so that we incorporate our responses to those particular government programs. What is our dream question? What's the best result for regulation? it's a very interesting question, because we've debated it in the organization, and there are those who take a view that, no, we're here to implement the Act, so the best consequence is the best implementation of the Act. And there are some who are arguing that, no, we should have a view about what is the best result in the country when you have regulated. Now, again, depending on the philosophical position you take, generally regulators exist to work themselves out of a job, because regulators are a substitute for a market. Now, that is if you're a free economist and you believe in those issues. I think there's contestation in this country around how free is our economy. Is it a free economy? Should it be a free economy? But if one stayed with a free economy, and marketist's view is that competition should be encouraged, so that regulate until you create competition. Once competition has been created, exit the space. And competition will sort out the price. keep your antitrust or your competition commission to deal with collusion amongst business people, but ideally the market often solves issues. What we've discovered is that even in Europe, the dream has been evolving. So at some point, these things were government-owned, and the dream was to privatize and get competition coming. Even with private participants, regulators have not been disbanded. Instead, their dreams have been evolving. The most recent dream that the regulators in Europe have adopted for themselves is the best outcome for European consumers. Now they're taking a European view. They're not taking a specific country view, because once what they did was to create markets in each of the countries. So they moved from markets in national jurisdictions to an integrated European market. Now they've got an almost integrated West European market. They want to integrate with Eastern Europe. You know, so the dream of regulators tends to be evolving. I suppose as a national regulator, we'll take our cue from what the dream for the energy policy and landscape is in the country. We can't come out now and say markets if that's not where our government is going. So our dream will evolve as well, depending on where the country is. But at the moment, what we're saying is that our dream is to regulate to ensure fairness in pricing, ensure access for the consumers, and ensure that there's investment so that the dream of universal access is achieved in the country. And it's an intermediate dream, but that's the best we can do at the moment, given where the energy policy landscape is. We will become more aspirational, Dr. Slough, and we'll come back with a better dream. and then the
first
question...
But according to Dr. Slough, you must dream.
Yes. We are going to go and dream. We are. Make sure it's not a nightmare. we are going to go and dream. Chairperson, the third question related to one-stop-shop energy regulator. Generally, energy regulators do not regulate the primary energy source. We tend to regulate at least the tertiary and or application. So the issues around the nuclear regulator, for instance, it's by international protocol that there are safety regulators that must be established around nuclear, given the hazardous nature of nuclear. And it's specialized skills that needs to be kept in place, specific protocols around how you deal with waste, how you react to incidents around nuclear and all of that. So perhaps it's not a question, we're not saying that do not investigate the possibility of consolidating energy regulation in the country, but we're saying that nuclear regulators are established by international protocol given the issues that arise around nuclear. So when we discuss and debate those issues and we're taking cue from our policymakers, we will look at those types of issues. However, as a regulator, we could say that, yes, we could be a one-stop regulator in another sense, in terms of the validity of the aspects that we are currently responsible for. So in electricity, we regulate everything, generation, transmission, distribution, retail, the work. However, in pipe gas, there's a component that's not there. Distribution is not regulated. It's not covered by law to be regulated, so there's a gap there. Petroleum pipeline. The price of petrol has got a number of slices to it. We're doing a small slice that relates to the pipeline. National Treasury has got a big scope there in terms of the levies they impose, the road accident fund, the department regulates the marketing margin. So those are some of the areas we could investigate. So it's a slightly different dimension of a one-stop energy regulator as opposed to looking at that particular specific primary source of energy called nuclear. The question from the chairperson, cost-reflective tariffs, we will flag those, chairperson. We'll take our cue from the energy policy, energy pricing policy, and the department there has indicated to us that there's a plan to extend the period for moving towards cost reflectivity. However, we have started the work of getting cost of supply studies done, so it would be good for us to come back with the department to report on what's coming out in that particular space. Customer education, chairperson, I can only say yes. When we say there's room for improvement, what we are saying is that we could be more creative than what we've been thus far. And it doesn't necessarily call even for increase in staff, but just being a little bit more creative than what we have been, joining in with other entities, being more creative, and moving the issues of customer education a bit more towards customer advocacy, so that you empower the customer, because an empowered customer is a better customer for anybody. So those are the types of things we're talking about, and we've started the discussions internal to the organization, and hopefully we'll present something that would be to your satisfaction around that area. Regulatory environments that facilitate investment. Are there any enhancements that can be done to the current environment? Definitely. There are some powers that we have seen other regulators tend to have that we do not have, and we are in touch with the department around the amendment of laws to give us those powers. And the robustness of the existing structures, it's one of those areas I feel haven't been tested. We have had court cases that have sort of contested the regulatory areas, but they have never reached finality, so the system is still really finding itself, and you are quite correct, Chair, that we must seek to establish robust structures, because that would definitely enhance the investment environment. We would argue, though, that our environment is not particularly fragile, given the amount of money that has been put in the renewable program. It's a good 40, 42 billion rand of proper money. Venture capital people went to banks, and banks came in and provided loans. It's not IMF or World Bank and soft loans and soft term. So our sense is that the environment is relatively robust. However, it still does need to be tested, and as we move along with experience, we will then know how strong or how weak it is. Compliance monitoring, Chairperson, yes, it's an area again that we are looking to enhance. A number of things that we need to do in terms of the skill set internally, in terms of the law, and allowing us to do things that would send strong signals that compliance is very important to operators, and we have started interacting with the department around those particular gaps, at least from a legislative point of view. We are also discussing internally around the capacity and competence levels in that particular area. Preemptive measures of balancing interests of and needs of stakeholders. Yep. There are a number of policy tools and methodologies that we have built that we believe will assist us to ensure that we achieve the best balance at any given point in time. It's a question of it's a function of a number of things. It's the energy policies, the methodologies, and all of that. And we believe that in the MYPD3, as a regulator, we utilize those by taking a view on particular policy aspects on which we hadn't had a response from government, and we've ended up where we've ended up. Time will tell whether or not it was the correct thing that we did or not. And the specific policy issue that I want to use as an example here is that of a standalone balance sheet argument by both Eskom and Transnet. We took a view around that. It was a proactive measure. We got to the figures we got to. We want to see what the 5 years will tell us in relation to Eskom about whether or not that view that we took was correct. But by the way, the view was that they don't need a standalone balance sheet. They have government behind them, and that could impact the price in a significant way, and Mr. Pugula would have briefed you, Chairperson, around those types of issues and the calls we have made. So we do try, however, there are serious limitations and constraints by nature of the fact that we are a regulator. We do not make law, we apply law. The efficiency of the regulator, restructuring of the sector, Chairperson, that will definitely impact us, and it's a matter that we will deal with as the horizon becomes clear. At the moment, you have a bill that's still in the parliamentary process. You could overcorrect, and the bill would end up at another place, but we are watching the space, and we are ready to change direction as quickly as is possible. For instance, the creation of ISMO, the Independent System Operator and Market Operator, would require a slightly different set of skills to what we have internally. It would require an addition, and we would have to bring those skills in. However, timing is everything. We can't bring them in too early before the bill is passed. The bill has been in the system for more than 2 years. If we had reacted 2 years ago, we would have hired people that would not be really doing that work. So it's a question of timing, but we are fully cognizant of what the changes in the environment would mean to us as an organization. Okay, the question around the transmission development plan and ADAM, they complement each other, they feed into each other. The transmission development plan relates to the transmission component of the supply industry, and ADAM relates specifically to distribution, to the distribution part of the sector. However, you have to maintain all three components of the value chain to make sure that you have an optimally functioning system. So, yes, Chairperson, there's room for alignment in those two programs. In fact, our own assessment of the ESCOM application is that they took quite a bit of their work on information from the ADAM program and incorporated it into the distribution side of the application. And that shows that industry is working properly, actually, when that happens. There was one group didn't come with a set of numbers and another came with a different set of numbers. So there are synergies that we're beginning to see there. On the MYPD3 monitoring issues, does it include municipalities? Municipalities are monitored in their own program. So, yes, we monitor all operators, both ESCOM and municipalities. Consumer forums, ESCOM has these. Are we not going to be duplicating? Yes, Chair, there is a risk of duplication. However, the consumer forums are specific to each supplier. Where you have suppliers adjacent to each other, there is a case to be made of being creative and making sure that those work together. However, strictly speaking, City Power has its own area of jurisdiction, so does ESCOM. The fact that they're separated by Clapton Road is a function of something else. But in practice, we will make sure that we do not duplicate, and where there's proximity, we get the forums working together and get the suppliers to work together to make sure that those forums do not cause problems for themselves. So you flagged the issue of the transportation of petroleum products, road, rail versus pipeline. I think you said that that's a matter for further discussion, and I'd like to kick it to that process because it's been a subject matter of extensive discussions between ourselves and the department. So I think it would be better if we came here with the department and we shared both sides of the
thought. I'm sure you're noting that, né? So that we can negotiate at what stage can this be brought. Because remember, also the other communication here is about the investment on the pipeline itself. You know how it is ballooned and things. Now, you know, I must say, honourable members, one of the uneasy issues was that Transnet is doing its own study, UNERSA is doing its own study. Maybe one can just ask a naive question: why don't they do a joint study? Because all we want to know is that why was there an overspend? You know. And everyone in South Africa, I'm very sure, except those who are the guilty ones, supposing they will be, is concerned about quite a number of these major initiatives. They'll start with 5 billion, but they'll end with 20, 25, and 30 billion Bungani, and you keep on asking, why are they doing these things? And I must say the thing is, you know, I think you, the fact that you are a regulator, you have to do things, but did that mean you have to do, you know, parallel studies, or would they be helpful when you do some peer review, you know, or triangulation, if I can say? Sorry to call on
that. Yeah, Chairperson, one will just kick it to that process and say, perhaps it's not such a bad idea, the studies might vindicate each other. Yeah. Chair, you then asked about the new term we introduced of common carriage and third-party access. It's essentially the same thing. So the pipeline belongs to A, but B, C, and D have the capacity of carrying their product using the same pipeline. So it's exactly the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so common carriage is about multiple parties being able to utilize the same facility, the same infrastructure.
Yeah, but just as a comment on obvious, almost on behalf of the member, I'm sure we'll have a keen eye and ear on that. Because you see, when it comes to black economic empowerment, you get a lot of noise about being denied access, This is what triggers my interest on this, you know. But one would assume, in fact, I wanted to get clarity just initially that what common courage is. But beyond that, which is why I'm saying that strategy, is because in a sense, it's a loaded question to say, please also be a little bit, be 101%, you know, alert to the extent to which third-party access on black-owned companies in particular, you know, is addressed.
It's a matter that we are watching very keenly. It worries us as well. For starters, the entities were not reporting, so we've had to get them to report on both their on their numbers, HCCI numbers, and their allocation mechanisms. So it's something that might be escalated, and we get to a different part. Other parts of the world do it slightly differently. So we might want to look at whether or not we've got the best rules in place, or those rules need to be amended to facilitate those things. I think the feedback on that charter is very useful, and what we're coming with is some of the salient features of how this transformation is not happening, and we've been very specific to some of the aspects of it. Information asymmetry is almost a phenomenon that happens in regulation. Inevitably, the entity will have more information than the regulator. And the question is, how much do you then reduce the gap between the two entities? We do collaborate with DOE. In fact, we have prescribed some of the data available from the DOE as data that must be used in our processes. And we do have information exchanges with the DOE. In fact, at some levels, there's a system alignment in relation to electricity. There's some capacity to see something through from the department all the way to ESCOM with NESA in between. So absolute high levels of cooperation in that space. But it's a constant battle between regulators and regulated entities.
Including municipalities.
Everybody just. In certain instances, in fact, regulators are known to make assumptions where certain information has not been provided by entities, simply because entities believe they can withhold that information.
My dear honourable members, are you listening to that one? I know it's almost 1 o'clock, but are you ready? I mean, I wish all of us would have been here. Because the question is then, how accurate are we? I'm saying we as Team Energy, the energy sector, how accurate are we in energy planning? Because we've got to have, I mean, IEP is coming very, very soon, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's on its way to the cabinet. You know, how confident are we going to be on the figures that are being used by the IEP? Maybe the IEP, because it's very broad, there may be some space, you know. But IRP, which is supposed to be iterative, you know, constantly checked, and even going down to even smaller and more short-term you know, plans, you know, the build programs and that sort of thing. Just keep it in mind. I know it's regulate, unfortunately, it's just one rule, but thanks for provoking that. It just means that maybe our standards would have to be more helpful to ensure that this area is grappled, I mean, without taking the department off the hook, Babuganda. Because at the end of the day, it rests on your shoulders to ensure that, you know, Noma Iganja, you know, we must have as accurate data and readily available data online on this area. Okay, table analysis. Okay, can carry on.
So you raised the issue of harmonization of laws. Chairperson, is an ongoing process. Our discussions as an energy regulator, we've seen scope for harmonization and approaching the department jointly to say harmonize in these particular areas. So that's work in progress, and it's work that's continuing, and we'll get there. the different acts call the same things different things, tariffs, prices, approved, set, the methodology is different in the one you approve, so somebody must apply in the one you set, so you are the one who does it. So all of those types of issues, we are in discussions with the department to make sure that we standardize the nomenclature and create certainty and are able to then apply consistent principles across in the energy space and not have a methodology for electricity and another one for gas and yet you're the same regulator. So it's those types of things that we emphasize on. But even internally, there are things that we've just had to standardize in the way we approach.
As a way of empowering members, I don't know, I mean, I wasn't here from the start. Have you ever shared this scenario with the committee? If not, can you just work out a nice matrix to show these areas and share it with the committee? So that as we move along and get any input from both the regulator and the department down the line, would have had some baseline information on it. So
we'll do it, we'll just do the basic terminology here on tariff price and those types of things, and the members can see that in the powers of the regulator. Chair, the point around the SIPs, we will take your point, we will incorporate it, and we'll come back and indicate what we need to be doing. Yes, in our document we refer to HR policies, but HR planning is something our own board has been emphasizing, and we are going to move towards that and do it properly, actually, going forward. Under enabling technology, the question you asked is what role would NERSA play in the introduction of smart grids? Whereas the introduction of smart grids tend to be operational issues, our own systems would have to be able to communicate and interface with those systems. So we are sitting with industry around the issues of introducing smart grids and standardizing certain aspects of it so that when we have to change our own system, we change it to standards on the one side. So you don't avoid creation of fragmentation on the other side. But we would also need to have smart systems to be able to, because if the system works properly and the regulator can interact with the smart system, the smart grid, we get information directly from the information asymmetry as well gets minimized. So there are lots of good things that could come out of that particular program. But at the moment, it's nascent. There are very few entities that are moving towards that. So we are working with industry to standardize what comes in so that when we respond, we're responding to a standard form on that side.
Please have the best carrot and stick on that one.
Chairperson, on the regulatory reporting manuals, we will come back to the PPC to update. But the big six metros, as indicated, Chair, are moving along. There are different points, so we can come back and indicate in detail what's happening in that space. Under Program 5 on slide 67, the question was why we're not doing energy efficiency quarterly. I think that's a function of an operational issue, that the results themselves, I don't know if Eskom tracks the results monthly or quarterly, but we can relook that. It's not a problem.
But it triggers a bigger picture, not just you, by being able to get the relevant or requisite information.
There's also the fact that auditing processes are very difficult to do in shorter periods because this is a full-on audit. We do not just check information, we audit. We send in a team that spends about two and a half months on EE. So there's that as a function as well. But we'll relook the area and we'll come back to the committee around it. Chairperson, those 50% that you're asking about, can I request that we come back to them? There was a whole batch of issues where we had set as a target 50% of complaints received, 50% of investigations and those types of things. The preliminary response would be, particularly around in investigations, it's a new area. So, and we do not quite have the legislative authority that we know other entities have. We are emulating and finding our way as we're moving along. That's why we have started at a low level. But we'll come back to the committee and explain why the 50%. The question of unlicensed facilities, Chair, and how does this happen, It is indeed a humdinger. We are also, as a regulator, we cannot believe that people can believe that they do not need to be licensed. But Jefferson, the syndrome is actually a little bit more serious. There are entities who refuse to take possession of their licenses. So you license an entity and you go to them and you say, here's your license, and they say, no, we don't want it. So there's a particularly in the petroleum space, there's something that's very interesting. We don't find it as much in gas and electricity, but it's in the petroleum space. It might well be a function of the fact that regulation is new in the area. It might well be a function of the fact that it's a no consequences regulatory environment. So, you know, people can call your bluff and those types of things. So we are still working on it to see what actually is the issue. However, we must say that those that we have approached, in most instances, they have complied and applied and come under the regime. Chairperson, the issue of research around new sources of energy, we will endeavor not to duplicate. We are sharing what we are doing with the department. Training and development, why 80% and not 100%? Although it's something that we've been doing over the years, it's something that we hadn't monitored, so we thought that we'll start with intermediate KPIs and then we'll move to the aspirational one and absolute ones. How do we refund the industry where there's over-recovery? And the CFO will correct me, Chair, here, but what we do is we calculate the amount due. We minus what we already have in our pockets, and then invoice for the balance. That's how we recover. So we basically give industry a credit. We don't send the money back to them for them to pay back. Is that correct? Yes. Yeah. So that's how we do. Yeah. Chair, if I just deal with the Prof's questions.
Okay, fine.
We'll try and move quickly through that. Slide 69, the numbers of end user forums. Chair, we did say that although the law has not been passed, we have been persuading operators to set them up, and there are some that have set them up even though the law is not in existence. So we hope the law will give us an impetus, but the idea here is to stretch the staff and say, go and set them up. You don't necessarily absolutely, you know, have to wait for the law to be passed. Let's see what we can do in the meantime whilst we're waiting for the law. The law is coming in any event, so whether people do it now or later, you know, it will either be painful or leisurely, depending. Chair, the law is coming. It's what Mr. Ganta was going to report and respond on, but we are aware that the department is working on that. The Gas Act review, Chair, again, the function of the department. Yes, the department has set up a task team that includes NERSA, and we have advice on all the gaps that we have spotted in relation to the Gas Act. And the gaps include, for instance, the value chain regulation. So we regulate transmission and storage, but distribution is not covered. It looks like it was an error, you know, an omission from a drafting point of view. It might have been a philosophical issue. Chair, there are new forms of gas that were not there when the Gas Act was passed. So it just needs to move with the times and catch up with those sorts of things. And then there are a few other things that were just not written properly in the Act. Those are some of the things that we've pointed out to the team, or our contribution in the task team that's looking at the Gas Act. But the department can also give feedback. It did go to Cabinet in May. It came back, but it's on its way again. So I'll leave that to the department. The issue of many regulators, page 76 of the document. There specifically, Chair, we're referring to the price of petrol and the number of entities that regulate it. So NERSA regulates a component, the Department of Energy regulates a component, Treasury regulates a component, that's transport regulates a component. So that's just how it has been in the country. And what we're saying is that we're pointing out that is a risk and a challenge to the system. And there needs to be a national dialogue to decide to resolve that. The Department of Energy has made its views known around that, but there are still components that are regulated by Treasury. Whether or not the idea is to remove them from Treasury, it's another point altogether. However, what we're saying is that we do find that when you are regulating and there are so many people who are regulating, it's inevitable that people out there will game the system. And that's what we're highlighting. Issue of partial reliance on consultants. Chair, we are reducing our reliance on consultants. However, I think the truth must be told that with some of these skills,
those people are so expensive they can never be hired on a government salary. So we are still reliant on them, but the scope has reduced quite substantially. This year we have a big saving on the consultants' budget because staff that we thought would refer there, staff internally did it, and it worked out. So we are reducing that reliance, but there are some. There would always be a little bit of utilization of external consultants just based on the skill sets that they tend to have. Complicated licensing requirements, have they now been simplified? Yes, straightforward question. It's a part of the value of the feedback from customers. You know, we have simplified and we have advertised the steps in the form of the frequently asked questions. RSA may not, or the issues of page 78, the issues of death fines and RSA missing the boat. Chairperson, we were just stating it as a postulation, so we even use the word may, because there are a whole lot of actors that would need to move for us to be able to take advantage of that, not the least private sector, who must decide that this is an investment environment that they want to come into. People must be sure that if they invest in expensive LNG facilities, the country will move towards LNG and utilization of LNG. So there are a number of factors that would influence who needs to do what. Overall, it's an issue to be led by the Department of Energy, and we're just saying here are the developments in the horizon. Can the relevant people wake up and see that they take the relevant action? Otherwise, we would be in trouble. And yes, Chairperson, I dealt with page 84 and 85, which was the categorization and the capturing of the risk. The last question related to the weaknesses in the GAF Act. Chairperson, we have given this feedback to the department. Yes, there are weak provisions in the GAF Act. And we have made proposals around how it should be sorted out. Yeah. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. That's wonderful. But in closing, let's one of the members, I'm sure, can commend the regulator, amongst other things, in its role in facilitating Windows 1. Windows 2 is around the corner. But also the forward thinking in the gas pricing process, plus enforcing price compliance, because we need to ensure certainty there. The subsidies, the 3.2% per kilowatt hour on subsidies. I took note of that, and I'm sure we'll be dancing together down the line to look at that. And you know how passionate this committee is, not just me, on free basic electricity and free basic alternative energy. In terms of what's seen as a contradiction between energy, overall energy plan and the national development plan, which is a broader issue, and Ubabu Kanda is listening. Maybe one of the members, a special session is essential in that, because there was also media coverage last week, which I deem it was rather irresponsible, you know, because the NDP has long been issued, you know. I mean, I was surprised that all of a sudden there just comes a front-page thing as if the NDP has just been released by government, you know, like last week or yesterday, that sort of thing, you know. To me, surely media follows things, you know, consistently, not in that way. It was a little bit of a surprise. So let's keep that in mind, honourable members, and see how we balance it. And I'm assuming that other committees will be doing the same, you know, how's environment and water, how's health, how's whoever, you know, taking into account the framework of the NDP, you know. Bob Kanga, I hope, Ms. Kote, you're noting that, and when we do our planning. And that will also link up with the regular updates. You know, we've got a lot of in your plate. We've thrown in a lot of things. But we will see as we move along, one of the members, how do we, encourage updates from NASA, even other entities as well. You know, I suppose that one should encourage not only physical briefing that should come. We could do it in other creative ways as well. On that basis, let me thank everyone. I think for now, the regulator has been helpful to indicate their roadmap, both in short term, or that is 1 year, and also strategically in terms of the strategy plan. And they will be monitoring your performance on that basis. Thank you very much. The meeting stands adjourned. We'll be meeting tomorrow. Oh, sorry, not tomorrow. not a committee. Next week, 30th April at 2249. I think that will be last.